That's it for me. I'm taking a slightly extended Easter break. I'll be back Tuesday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe and happy Easter.
Thank you, Nick, and same to you as well, with bells on. It is approaching 10 o'clock, and we find ourselves... Well, yesterday at this time, we were a little worried, weren't we, that the sheer gravity, the scale of the situation that the United Kingdom finds itself in was not being properly appreciated by the population, largely because so many of the engines that influence our discourse had, for reasons known only to themselves, decided that Donald Trump's war was a brilliant idea, that he would be a brilliant leader, that Keir Starmer was a fool for not joining in, and that it was deeply shameful for the United Kingdom not to be embarked upon this insane quest. So they can't really now do full reverse verits and admit the scale of the mistake that they made. I think that's probably about to change.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prime Minister is preparing to hold a press conference in Downing Street to update the public on the war in Iran. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to cover both the conflict and government support for households. Forecasts by Cornwall Insight suggest that energy bills could rise by £288 in July due to increasing wholesale costs. The Business Secretary Peter Kyle has told LBC this morning ministers are monitoring costs closely.
We are acting today to make sure that we get a grip on the family finances and ensure that we get a grip on the challenges from the cost of living. We are also, as you heard from the Chancellor, looking very carefully at the autumn period when we know that there may well be challenges in the system and who might be affected the most and how we can have appropriate spending in order to support people. And the Chancellor is leading on that work.
Iran has said the Strait of Hormuz will only reopen to those who comply with its new laws. Tehran has effectively closed the shipping lane, which has seen oil and gas prices rise since the start of the conflict. An LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with the regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. In one case, a 15-year-old girl was sexually abused by two staff members at a home in County Durham. Care expert Chris Wilde says it's a national crisis.
It's a national catastrophe. No one's talking about it. This is one of the biggest scandals we have in this country right now about children in care being dumped in squalor and abused by criminal gangs, and nobody's doing anything about it to stop it.
The Department for Education says providers operating outside of the law face serious consequences. There's more on the LBC app. Increases in the mandatory national living wage for nearly 2.7 million workers come into force this morning. For employees over the age of 21, their hourly wage will go up by 50 pence to £12.71. Those aged 18 to 20 will see their hourly pay rise by 85 pence to £10.85. Businesses have warned, though, that higher wage bills will force them to increase prices or cut staff. More than a million people in England who are overweight or obese are to be prescribed the weight loss jab Wegovy to prevent heart attacks and strokes. Officials say the jabs will be available on the NHS in the coming months. And NASA says a mission to the moon is on track ahead of a planned launch tonight. Artemis 2 is attempting to send four astronauts on a 10-day journey. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 172 at 10,349. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, I'm cooking for everyone this Easter, but I don't want to break the bank. Got any tasty offers?
Well, with Nectar, there's half price on selected sides of salmon, and selected beef joints and whole legs of lamb are better than half price.
Ooh, they'll be as happy as my wallet.
Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus, Nectar required, excludes locals, ends 7th of April, subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after ten, and the Prime Minister is scheduled to, I think I would say, address the nation. It's billed as a news conference, and, of course, is rightly described as such, but it feels to me a little bit more significant than a run-of-the-mill meet-the-media moment. Not least because it was only put in the diary last night. We will expect him to talk about two things. Well, one thing, but the domestic and international consequences and ramifications of that one thing. Donald Trump's deranged war in Iran and the increasingly obvious impacts that they are likely to have upon us. Impacts which Keir Starmer will be called upon to ameliorate, even as various liars and traitors in our political and media establishment continue to try to blame him for it. Listen, on a lower level, it's not very convenient for us, is it? I mean, the worst thing that a phone-in host can be called upon to do is to launch a phone-in off the back of a 45-minute-long live broadcast of somebody else or other people speaking. But one thing that helps is when it kicks off on the top of an hour so that you could hit 11 o'clock fresh and new. So, I mean, we now have to talk among ourselves until 10:15. I can't get a phone-in up and running. I suppose we could have booked a guest, but none of us thought of that in time. And therefore, it is to me that the baton is handed next. And I'm fine with that because there's something I want to really get off my chest. And it is a front page, and I know I go on about this, but if you did what I do for a living and you had spent now the best part of, I think, about a decade and a half listening to people, not so much on this programme anymore, but you know that they're out there with extraordinary influence and power. But you were listening to people who have been persuaded of the most ridiculous things. Listening to people who, for example, in the middle of a crisis caused in large part by our dependence upon fossil fuels, people with big platforms and loud hailers and political offices or at least political positions calling for more dependency on fossil fuels. I mean, is there anything madder than that? I will mention Brexit briefly because there will be few examples, touch wood, please God, in our island history of a population being so successfully persuaded to smash itself in the face with a rusty old frying pan. And there are other things as well, putting Boris Johnson in Downing Street, bending the knee for Donald Trump. I mean, our politicians and media figures queuing up to bend the knee for Donald Trump, even as his depravity and derangement was visible and obvious from space. His own family members told us, but nope, the Daily Mail knew better. And it is to the front page of the Daily Mail that I direct your attention first today, because even as a slightly enthusiastic chronicler of their decline or of their hideousness, I couldn't quite believe what I read this morning. So if you're not fully across the news, let me fill you in. Donald Trump has made an absolute pig's ear of his Middle Eastern war, which he can't even call a war, because if he called it a war, then that would remind everybody that he's not supposed to undertake these sorts of ventures without congressional approval. So he's called it, well, he's tried to call it a special military operation, but he keeps forgetting to say special because he's stupid. So he calls it a military operation, and because he's stupid, he then occasionally lets slip that he has to call it a military operation, because if he called his war a war, he would be required to secure congressional approval before he even did it, let alone continued it. So Donald Trump has made an absolute mess of everything, not paying attention to all of the people that would have been able to tell him had they been able to fight their way through the army of sycophants that routinely surrounds him in the Oval Office, again, people from the worlds of politics and the media. Had they been able to get into the room, they could have told him that the Strait of Hormuz would be closed by Iran at the first sign of offensive action from him or Israel or both, and that reopening it would be close to impossible. You certainly would not be able to do it from the air. I'm not claiming that I could have given him that lecture, but I could have made two phone calls to people who know what they're talking about and then happily filled him in words of one syllable. But he had no interest in that, because he was doing it, and now you insert your own dead cat to distract from his extraordinary repetitive presence in the Epstein files, the hideous accusations against him personally contained therein, the state of the US economy, the failure to get a handle on almost all of the things that he claimed he would be able to get a handle on, the unraveling lies, the continuing corruption, moral and quite possibly financial, now that we've seen the speed with which market changes follow announcements from the Oval Office, and the cryptocurrency obsessions and all the rest of it. So he has made an almighty mess, a mess that he is simultaneously aware of and unaware of, because his lizard brain will tell him that he is in trouble, but the carapace of I don't even know what you'd call it, the carapace of character defects that he's constructed to insulate himself from the reality of his own hideous existence is such that he simultaneously believes it's gone well and gone badly. So he knows in his lizard brain that it's gone badly, right? But his self-delusion, his derangement, in fact, is such that he'd probably pass a lie detector test. So I find so enduringly fascinating about these people. He would probably pass a lie detector test. He said, did the tariffs go well? Yes. And I think he'd pass a lie detector. This is why it is impossible, increasingly impossible to analyze and or predict what he does. For example, if I told you that he has in the last 10 minutes told a journalist that he's thinking of pulling out of NATO, would you believe me? I'll tell you, well, let's do a quick hands up. So Donald Trump has told a journalist that he is thinking of pulling out of NATO. Hands up if you think that's true. Because it's April the 1st, right? So you have to double check these things. I've already fallen for one today. More on that later. And I'm presuming that the piece of paper I've just been handed has been fact-checked, given that the date is April the 1st. But in Donald Trump's world, every day is April the 1st. Everything that comes out of the Oval Office, everything that comes out of his mouth, is something that needs to be filtered through the lens of April Fools. I am thinking of pulling out of NATO. It would be quite a good April Fool if it was Barack Obama, because you'd know immediately it was a joke. Donald Trump has told the Daily Telegraph he is strongly considering pulling the United States out of NATO after it failed to join his war on Iran. The Daily Telegraph clearly didn't get the memo. It's not a war. It's a special military operation, just like Vladimir Putin's illegal invasion of Ukraine. And speaking of Vladimir Putin, of all the people reaching for the Dom Perignon and the Morrison's party poppers, who would be most delighted by a United States president deciding to pull the United States out of NATO? Who would be most delighted? Which person on the planet, which individual person on the planet would be most delighted by the president of the United States imperiling world security on a scale that hasn't been seen since the end of the Second World War? Yeah, you're right. It would be Nigel Farage's favourite politician, Vladimir Putin, celebrating the actions of Nigel Farage's second favourite politician, Donald Trump. So it's true. I don't think it would be a very appropriate April Fool's, and I don't think my colleagues would have handed it to me 3 minutes ago if they hadn't triple-checked. So Donald Trump has told the Telegraph he is strongly considering pulling the United States out of NATO after it failed to join his war on Iran. I don't think it'll happen, but you have to report it, and I don't know what else to say in that context. So he has made an almighty mess of this. And he's doing what he always does. There is some... Oh, we're going to cross live to Downing Street. It looks like it's going to start a little early. I think even Keir Starmer was getting bored of my monologue.
...and peace. It is now clear that the impact of this war will affect the future of our country. So today I want to reassure the British people that no matter how fierce this storm, we are well placed to weather it, and that we have a long-term plan to emerge from it a stronger, a more secure nation. First, let me say once again, this is not our war. We will not be drawn into the conflict. That is not in our national interest. And the most effective way we can support the cost of living in Britain is to push for de-escalation in the Middle East and a reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, which is such a vital route for energy. To that end, we're exploring each and every diplomatic avenue that is available to us. The Foreign Secretary and the Chancellor have met their counterparts in the G7. The Defence Secretary has been in the Middle East speaking to our partners. And the UK has now brought together 35 nations around our statement of intent to push as one for maritime security across the Gulf. And today I can announce that later this week, the Foreign Secretary will host a meeting that brings those nations together for the first time, where we will assess all viable diplomatic and political measures that we can take to restore freedom of navigation, guarantee the safety of trapped ships and seafarers, and resume the movement of vital commodities. Following that meeting, we will also convene our military planners to look at how we can marshal our capabilities and make the strait accessible and safe after the fighting has stopped. Because I do have to level with people on this. This will not be easy. I spoke with relevant business leaders in shipping, finance, insurance and energy supply in Downing Street on Monday. And they were clear with me the primary challenge they face is not one of insurance, but one of safety and security of passage. So the fact is, we need all of this together. A united front of military strength and diplomatic activity, partnership with industry, so they too can mobilise once the fighting has stopped. And above all, clear and calm leadership. That is what this country is ready to provide. Because my guide from the start of this conflict has always been the British national interest. And freedom of navigation in the Middle East is in the British national interest. Let me turn now to the impact at home. Because I know that this is causing huge concern. People turn on their television, they look at their screens, they say explosions, infrastructure blown up, aggressive rhetoric. They worry that the UK will be dragged into this. We won't. But I also know that people have a deep sense that this will affect their family and their household. They can see it at the petrol pumps, and they worry about their energy bills. It is the job of government to meet these moments, not just with immediate action, but also with clarity about our direction. That's what I remember about the 1970s, when my family could not pay every bill. We struggled through the energy shocks and the price rises of that decade. But we always believed in the end that Britain would secure a better future for us. And I think that's what's been lacking in the crises of recent years. And I'm not prepared to ask the British people once again to go through a crisis, come out of it, and say business as usual, back to the status quo. So on our economy, on our energy, and on our defence, this time will be different. We will make Britain a fairer and more secure country, because that hope is what is needed as the country comes together. And because how we emerge from this crisis will define us for a generation. So, as I set out a few weeks ago, we have a 5-point plan for the immediate crisis. We're cutting energy bills by over £100 per household today. We've extended the cut in fuel duty until September, and we're monitoring that situation daily. We're supporting people exposed to heating oil rises, setting aside £53 million for that. We're taking back control of our energy security by investing in clean British energy, because that is the only way we get your bills off the roller coaster that is controlled by Putin and the Iranian regime. And frankly, I'm sick and tired of your energy bills fluctuating up and down because we're on the international market, when if we took control of our energy and had homegrown renewables, we could stabilise your bills. And finally, as I say, we'll continue to push for de-escalation in the Middle East. But look, there's also a bigger argument here, because every one of these measures is part of a long-term plan to make our country more secure and more resilient to shocks like this. I mean, just look at what's happening today. Today, your energy bills will be cut because of the action that we took at the budget. And whatever happens in Iran, that price is now fixed until July. Today, if you need a prescription, instead of rising as they used to, the price will be frozen for a year. Today, if you're working on the national living wage, your wages will go up. Next week on Monday, the state pension will go up. Next week, the two-child limit will be scrapped, lifting 450,000 children out of poverty, the vast majority from working households. And next week, the biggest strengthening of workers' rights in a generation will become law, a huge boost to the economic security of working people. Now, some people may say this isn't new, this was already planned, to which I say, yes, that is my point. Everything I've done in politics, certainly since the Ukraine war in 2022, is a response to this new and dangerous world. We campaigned for a windfall tax on oil and gas companies, which we extended. We focused on the cost of living, and we acted at the budget. And we've always emphasised the need for clean British energy. And we've invested because we knew that making our country secure in this world was the ultimate test that we would face and our ultimate responsibility to the British people. Now, it's not going to be easy, clearly. And in the coming weeks, as you would expect, we will continue to assess the economic effects. We will continue to stand up for the British national interest. And we will continue to do what we must to guide our country calmly through this storm. However, it is increasingly clear that as the world continues down this volatile path, our long-term national interest requires closer partnership with our allies in Europe and with the European Union. Now, we have made progress on this front, on agriculture, electricity, emissions trading and more. But as the Chancellor has rightly pointed out, Brexit did deep damage to our economy, and the opportunities to strengthen our security and cut the cost of living are simply too big to ignore. So, in the coming weeks, we will announce a new summit with our EU partners. And I can tell you that at that summit, the UK will not just ratify existing commitments made at last year's summit. We want to be more ambitious. Closer economic cooperation. Closer security cooperation. A partnership that recognises our shared values, our shared interests, and our shared future. A partnership for the dangerous world that we must navigate together. A world where this government will be guided at all times by the interests of the British people. Thank you. I will now take questions, and I have the BBC first, Henry.
Thank you, Prime Minister. As it stands, fuel duty is set to go up in September. You've said that's under review. I think today you said you were monitoring it. It is very hard to find anyone here in Westminster who seriously believes that you are going to press ahead with that. So if today was about reassurance, why don't you just give motorists that little bit of reassurance now and tell them it's not going to go up?
Well, fuel duty is set until September, as you rightly say, in terms of the cut. That will remain the position. The other measures that we're taking today, obviously energy bills are going down today on average by £100 a household, and that will remain down until the end of June, whatever happens in the conflict. And I know people are concerned to know that that remains the case, whatever happens in the conflict. So let me be clear about that. And those that are heating their homes with oil are obviously getting support. We are keeping this under review. Obviously, a lot will depend on how long the conflict goes on, how quickly the Strait of Hormuz can be opened. And that's why I've made the statement I have today about the next step that we're taking, particularly on the Strait of Hormuz, which will be crucial in terms of what actually happens to energy prices and how long there's a spike in those prices. So that's the action that we're taking today. I've got ITV, Harry. Harry.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Harry Horton from ITV News. President Trump has said this morning that he's considering pulling the US out of NATO. You've just talked about looking at a new long-term partnership with the EU, including on security. Is this an acknowledgement that Britain's long-term security relationship with the United States is about to change?
Well, let me say a number of things in response to that. Firstly, NATO is the single most effective military alliance the world has ever seen, and it has kept us safe for many decades, and we are fully committed to NATO. Secondly, that whatever the pressure on me and others, whatever the noise, I'm going to act in the British national interest in all the decisions that I make. And that's why I've been absolutely clear that this is not our war, and we're not going to get dragged into it. But I'm equally clear that when it comes to defence and security and our economic future, we have to have closer ties with Europe. That's why we had the summit last year. This year, as I've just announced, there'll be a further summit. We will make good on the commitments that we put in place last year, but we will also go further in relation to the alignment. Thank you very much, Harry. I've got Lucy from Sky. Yeah, Lucy.
Thank you. Prime Minister, you're talking here, of course, today about the cost of living. You said yourself, nothing in this speech is new. You've got the Australian Prime Minister earlier talking about slashing tax on petrol and diesel, telling people not to use more than they need. Can you be really clear to people at home listening to this? Should they be looking at changing their behaviours now?
Well, in terms of the situation, we're monitoring it carefully. We had a COBRA meeting looking at the ongoing impacts here in Britain yesterday. That is being monitored daily. I had the a business sector in on Monday to discuss with them, this was shipping, finance, insurance, to discuss with them mainly how we deal with the Strait of Hormuz, how quickly we can get action there to get the supply open or fully open. And that is what we are doing. They're decisions that we think are right here, and we will continue to do that. But I emphasise again, it's clear to me that the main determinant now of the impact is going to be how long the conflict goes on and the question of how quickly we can get passage, safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz. And the two don't necessarily go together. In other words, I don't think it can necessarily be assumed that a de-escalation of the context, conflict necessarily at the same time brings the full reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, and that's why we're moving to the next level of planning in relation to the Strait of Hormuz. We've been dealing with this for some time, but now we move to the next stage with the Foreign Secretary meeting coming up later this week, the first time we've convened those, that coalition, if you like, of countries to look at diplomatic means, political means, and then the military planners coming together at a separate meeting to look at capabilities. Thank you very much, Andy. And I should say, Andy, congratulations to your daughter on the gold medal, I think, that she's just got.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Prime Minister. Prime Minister, actually, following on partly from Lucy's question, I mean, in other parts of the world, there is much more of a sense of leaders preparing their populations to say, this is hard, you may have to do things differently. Yet from your government so far, we've heard behave as normal, even book your summer holidays as normal. Isn't it time maybe to address the British people and say, perhaps we have to start thinking about our behaviour in a different way?
Well, a number of points in response to that. Firstly, there are a number of measures we're taking. The direct measures in relation to energy price, the support for oil, fuel duty, the wider measures, most of which come in either today or this week, on the cost of living, which are not a response to this particular conflict, but are a response to the fact that the cost of living has been the number one issue In our country for a very long time. I'm conscious that whatever's going on in the world, whatever's going on in politics, that remains the number one issue. In relation to the situation, we are monitoring it very carefully on a daily basis. Our assessment it looks at supply, looks at the impact on our economy, and we'll keep the measures we've got in place at the moment. I'm absolutely convinced that the most important thing is de-escalation. The most important thing is getting the Strait of Hormuz back fully open. And that's why we're putting a lot of effort into the next stage of that and really pushing forward. And as I've said, we're prepared to take a sort of leadership role in that as the United Kingdom in relation to the Straits of Hormuz. Thank you, Andy. I've got Paul for Channel 4. Paul.
Morning, Prime Minister. Look, most of the measures you're talking about were already in place before this war kicked off. So far you seem reluctant to talk about specifics for help because of this war, and the criticism is that you've been dithering. So have you been dithering, or yes or no, do you have in mind a fixed set of plans for the hardest hit by the cost of living crisis caused by this war? And if so, when can we expect to hear them? What are the key indicators that will make you say this is what we've got planned for you?
Yeah, let me just answer that. Firstly, a lot of the measures on the cost of living were measures that were taken at the budget last year, so we were ahead of this. Most people will be watching on their screens, worried about the damage they're seeing, the explosions they're seeing, the conflict, but they will also have this deep feeling inside, this could affect me. And what they mean by that is it could have an effect on the cost of living. We've been saying the cost of living is the single number one issue for a very long time. So it's not a coincidence that the measures coming into force today or on the cost of living, because I've been clear that that is the central issue. And that is the, I think, for most people in the country, that's the thing they're probably worrying most about today. So we're actually ahead of the game in relation to that, because we took those measures at the budget. The only reason energy bills are coming down today by an average of £100 is because of the measures that we took at the budget, and they'll be down for 3 months. So those measures have been taken. In relation to what might be needed later in the year, obviously we're working through contingencies. A lot of it will depend on how long the conflict goes on, how quickly the straits are open, because it's very difficult to assess at the moment what might be needed, say, in the winter, until we know the answer to that question. So we're looking at a number of contingencies, as you would expect. I think it's important to point out that whilst there will always be a concern about energy bills, I think people will begin to really worry when it gets to the autumn energy bill, because the summer bill, which is the next one, tends to be, on average, about 7% of the energy people use. It doesn't mean they're not worried about it, but I think most people will be looking to what's the one that comes when it gets colder later in the year. So we're working across all of that. But in the end, the focus has to be on de-escalation and getting the strait open. And that begins to answer the question of what is the nature of any support that may be needed. Clearly, we want to make sure that we act for everybody in keeping the price down, the cost down. And today's measure on energy bills is a measure for everyone. But equally, in terms of tailoring support, we need to make sure that nobody is left behind here. Thank you very much, Paul. Natasha from LBC. Natasha.
Clark from LBC. The head of the House Oversight Committee, which is investigating the crimes of Jeffrey Epstein, has called on the King to meet those victims. Do you think there is a moral case for doing so? And if I may, you've obviously outlined today on the cost of living all of what you're doing, which I'm sure listeners will welcome. But just 10% of the public think that the government's doing well. Why do you think that might be?
Well, let me deal with the important point you make at the end there, because one of the things that's really important for me to get across to the public is that their bills are coming down by £100 on average, and they're staying down until the end of June, whatever happens in the conflict. And I repeat that for a reason, and that is because I'm not sure everybody has heard that. It is really important for them to hear it, and I want as many people as possible to know that that's the case, because I know they're going to be anxious. And when I have said it to people, there's been the secondary question is that actually going to hold even if the conflict goes on? And the answer to that question is yes. So make it my job is to make sure that I get that across to the public, because that is the measure that comes into effect today. In relation to the King, I think it's important to appreciate this is part of the 250 celebrations that are in place. So it's a long-planned visit, and the US and UK are close allies have been for a very, very long time. But this is a visit that, as I say, has been long planned and is part of the 250 celebrations. That's where the focus of the visit will be. Thank you very much. Gabriel Nussbaum, please.
Hi, good Gabriel. Morning, Prime Minister. I'd like to zoom out a little bit to the wider elements of the cost of living crisis, specifically the one affecting the young generation, who were simply told, go to university, get a job, buy a house. We see today houses on average 8 times salary, student loans, very relevant at the moment. Jobs are either unavailable for young people, or if they are, there's no security. The pension system compared to previous generations is completely different. Salaries not keeping up with the cost of living crisis, and childcare costs through the roof, putting people off or delaying starting families. I'd love to ask you to share a message to this young generation, perhaps more to look at an element of hope and confidence looking forward to the future.
Yeah, well, let me give that and let me tell our young people we've got their back. And all of the points you raise are really important, whether it's home ownership, where the average age of home ownership has gone up because of the inaction of the last government. That's why we're building more homes. On childcare, childcare is now free from 9 months to 4 years. Makes a huge difference for young people with young children. In terms of the money it saves them, their ability to get back to work. And on that question of getting into work, we're putting in place what we call a youth guarantee, which is a strong support from the government to help people into work and support them into work, because all the evidence is if they are able to get into work, even for a relatively short period, the likelihood is that they will then go on from there with a secure job into the future. So all of those measures are in place. But it's really important you highlight the impact on young people, who I think will feel that they've been let down over the last decade and a half. And we need to put that right. Thank you very much. I've got Jessica from The Guardian. Jessica.
Morning, Prime Minister. I wanted to pick up some of what you said about a close relationship with Europe. Do you believe, you said before that you don't think it's right for the UK to rejoin the customs union. Are we heading towards more of a rejoining of the single market? Is that something you think would improve Britain's economic future?
Well, I do think that we should strengthen our cooperation on defence, security, energy, emissions and the economy. And on the economy, the steps we've taken so far have been in relation to the single market. And I'm ambitious that we can do more in relation to the single market, because I think that's hugely in our economic interests. Obviously, this is a matter of negotiation and discussion with the EU, but the summit we have this year will not be just be a stocktake summit where we look at actually the 10 strands that we put in place last year. It will be a deliberate ambition on our part to go further than that and to cooperate more deeply, including in the economic sphere. So thank you, Jessica. I've got Jack from The Sun. Jack.
Hi, Prime Minister. Jack Elson from The Sun. Can I just pick up on that point? Do your manifesto commitments not to rejoin the customs union, free movement or single market still stand? And you've previously said from this podium that you wouldn't be forced to choose between tethering Britain closer to either Europe or America, but it does seem that you are engaging with close negotiations with Europe and you have a deteriorating personal relationship with Donald Trump. So is it fair that you are actually choosing Europe over America?
Well, manifesto commitments remain, but we made it clear in the manifesto that we wanted a closer relationship with Europe. So that is perfectly consistent with our manifesto. I'm not going to choose because I think it's in our interest to have a strong relationship with the US and with Europe. But I do think that when it comes to defence and security, energy, emissions and the economy, we need a stronger relationship with Europe. I actually think that will help strengthen our relationship with the US, because successive presidents have said that Europe needs to do more on their defence and security. I've long argued that with European colleagues, that we should be doing more. And that's not just, for example, on defence spend, although it is on defence spend. It's also on how we spend, how we collaborate, cooperate. And that's why I've focused on deals, for example, that we've done with Norway in relation to frigates. Really good deal, very good for trade, very good for jobs in the Clyde, but really importantly, interoperability of the frigates. We can have our crews on their frigates, they can have their crews on our frigates. That, to me, is the future of a stronger European defence, which is bringing together the capability that we've had. So we don't just get each country developing its own capability. It's an ongoing discussion. I spoke at the Munich conference about it. I spoke at the JEF meeting about it last week in Finland, that we have to go beyond just a numbers game and be much more integrated in the way that we work on defence and security. Thank you, Jack. And I've got Joe from Bloomberg. Joe.
Prime Minister, President Trump said yesterday that he wouldn't come to the aid of the UK anymore in his Truth Social post. How seriously do you take that threat from our main ally?
Well, it's very important that we're clear. There's been a good deal of pressure on me to change my position in relation to joining the war, and I'm not going to change my position on the war. So whatever the pressure, whatever the noise, I'm the British Prime Minister and I have to act in our national interests. I should say that on defence and security and intelligence, we're obviously working closely with the US, as we always do. And in relation to the planning on the Strait of Hormuz, of course that involves talking to the Americans as well. So, as I say, whatever the pressure, whatever the noise, my job is, as British Prime Minister, to concentrate on what's in the British national interest. That's what's guided me through this conflict so far. It will continue to guide me as we go forward. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
And the time now is 10:39. That concludes Sir Keir Starmer's news conference, or sort of a quasi-address to the nation. There's quite a lot to pick over there, isn't there? And of course, everybody will have favourites. He declined to make any personal attacks on Donald Trump, which is obviously the correct course to take. But the strength, the resolution, indeed, with which he stressed that he would not be dragged into this war was, for me, the headline, the biggest headline. There's an adamance there that is rare to see. I'll read some of your comments shortly, but it'd be nice to get some phone calls. It's always tricky when you're sort of 40 minutes into the programme to turn it into a phone-in. But I don't know that today is not a day when I can just ask what you thought of that. I think it probably is. Normally, you expect at least 20 minutes of encouragement and enticement, provocation and incitement from me. But I'd like today to hit the 10:45 junction in 4 and a bit minutes' time, and then come back and open up the phone lines to you. So if you just want to tell me what you thought of that and why, the number you need is 03456060973. Let me run through a few texts and WhatsApps that have already come in order to sort of get your juices flowing, as it were. Chris writes, very impressed, even more so when I think back to Johnson's COVID addresses. This unsigned message says, hang up, James is better than this, I'm falling asleep here. So there you go, one plus, one minus. Trump's actions on NATO have compelled European countries, writes Joan, to look to their own defence for the first time in decades. Exposing Europe's laissez-faire approach is timely. Germany, together with the Baltic states, has reacted to the reality check in a positive manner. Only broken Britain flip-flops about like it's the 1990s. I can't claim to understand all of that, but I thought it made some interesting points. Carl is a little more concise. Starmer, this is more like it. More, please. Ooh, says Beatrice. Starmer is doing well, and maybe he will come into his own during this crisis. And hurrah for a new EU partnership. Rich, what a solid Prime Minister. Thank goodness. Imagine Boris or the lettuce in charge now. What a mess we would be in. Funnily enough, Rich, I was looking forward, not backwards. I was imagining Kemi Badenoch or Nigel Farage being in charge at this moment, and arguably feeling even more alarmed than I would have done if Boris Johnson or Liz Truss had been there. And Peggy in Southampton makes an excellent point. It's all very well right-wing newspapers having a go at him for repeating good things. His response should be, well, you never write about them, so nobody knows the stuff that we are already doing with regard to the cost of living. Everything he said is true, but it won't stop the knee-jerk Starmer bashing. Well, Starmer bashing is welcome here, but not, I hope, knee-jerk. I was very impressed by that top line on refusal to get involved. He is a lawyer. He knows that he can't. He's got growing problems with the deployment of US aeroplanes from RAF Fairford in particular, because a lot of people will, with some justification, argue that he's not staying out of the war quite as completely as he claims to be. That's a legally defensible position, and the best way to understand it is the difference between offense and defense. The difference between defending things and attacking things. But I felt that was huge. I, you will not be surprised to learn, was delighted to hear him pivot, and I think it is an actual pivot, from the sort of finality of Brexit to an admission, the first, I think, most comprehensive admission so far of the obvious and massive damage that he has done. He has to respond to the questions from NATO. ITV and Sky, I felt, on this occasion, doing a much better job, and LBC, Natasha Clark, doing a much better job of framing important and relevant questions than the BBC managed to do. But the NATO question he has to answer, and I'll remind you of what his answer was shortly, but Donald Trump said it today, which means he will probably say the opposite tomorrow. But a quick reminder of what he said on the NATO question.
NATO is the single most effective military alliance the world has ever seen. And it has kept us safe for many decades. And we are fully committed to NATO. Secondly, that whatever the pressure on me and others, whatever the noise, I'm going to act in the British national interest in all the decisions that I make. And that's why I've been absolutely clear that this is not our war, and we're not going to get dragged into it.
I like his use of the word noise. It's a diplomatic and a loyally deployment, that, because he could be talking about Donald Trump, and he could be talking about Nigel Farage and Kemi Badenoch, and he could be talking about the right-wing media, which I this is where I was before we were so rudely interrupted by the Prime Minister. I was in the process of showing you the front page of the Daily Mail. Trump's taunt exposes a PM without a plan. So a deranged, dishonest, disgusting president who has undertaken an illegal war and made an almighty mess of it somehow is an excuse to attack Keir Starmer, from a newspaper which was, of course, supporting the Nazis and Oswald Mosley just 1.5 lifetimes ago. Absolutely breathtakingly treacherous front page from the Daily Mail today, and it was the first thing I thought of when I heard Keir Starmer repeatedly use the word noise. Perhaps you thought of something else. You then have, I think, for me, possibly for you, a slightly overdue description of our relationship or the state of affairs between the United Kingdom and the European Union.
As the Chancellor has rightly pointed out, Brexit did deep damage to our economy.
Yeah, it sure did. So that was nice to hear as well. That's more sort of road ahead. Then the questions about the behaviour that we should adopt and the changes that we should make to our own conduct. I'm not quite sure whether he could or should have gone further on that, but it struck me as he spoke that we are quite lucky seasonally. You know, we are not moving into one of the coldest periods of the year, and it is during the coldest periods of the year, of course, that fuel prices become even more relevant everywhere except on the petrol forecourts. He didn't go near Natasha's question about whether or not the King should meet with Epstein victims, I think for diplomatic reasons, but it was a brilliant question. Gabriel Nussbaum, who you may not have heard of, is a online financial expert, like a kind of prototype Martin Lewis, and Downing Street, I'm told, are keen to get. He's more mostly a TikToker, but he's done TEDx talks. He's an influencer, which is a word that needs to, I think, be stripped of its negative connotations for people of my age and generation, because he will be reaching more people than the editor of the Daily Mail can dream of on a daily basis. But his question was interesting. I mean, he did take a step back and offer the Prime Minister an opportunity to paint a slightly more positive picture of the future for younger people. And then The Guardian came back to the EU, as did The Sun, and Bloomberg went in on the NATO question again with regards to Donald Trump's latest verbal belches. So I would probably call that reassuring at least, and impressive at most. But it leaves all sorts of questions hanging, right? It leaves most obviously the question hanging of what this safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz would look like, or rather, we might know what it would look like, but how would it be achieved? And then, of course, the question of de-escalation, in which our role is probably less obvious and less significant than it would be in the re-establishment of safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz. But you've just heard the Prime Minister talking for 40 minutes, and I would like you to tell me now what you thought of it, okay? And if you don't, I've got loads more. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. A very important speech at a very important moment in his premiership and for this country. How do you think he met the moment.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
At the moment, we've got the commitment to some energy help for those who really need it, an as-yet undefined group with an undefined amount in help. This is all going to be massively inflationary, and Keir Starmer has frankly placed his entire leadership now on making you feel richer. Well, then some VAT cuts are needed for petrol, aren't they? Or some fuel duty cuts are needed.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Lidl, find your move with a new Cribbit running range. Grab a pair of carbon running shoes for only £39.99 with advanced EVA soles and carbon plates. These and other Cribbit products will get you over the line for sure. Available in store now. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app, the XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve the perfect one instantly. Get £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili. Try Dolmio Intensify. Pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics. At Boots, pharmacies, and vitabiotics.com.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
10:51 is the time. And again, April Fool's Day, I need to warn you in advance. So if I told you the Daily Mail has already gone with the headline, PM declares war on Brexit. Would you say April Fools, or would you say, mad people are gonna do mad things? PM declares war on Brexit as an immediate knee-jerk response to what you just heard from a Prime Minister explaining the perilous state of the world and highlighting or outlining up to a point the measures or the task, the mission in front of him. Did you miss anything? Was there anything you felt he should have said that he didn't? Dee has been in touch to say he didn't answer any questions. I disagree with you there, but you don't provide any examples of the questions that he hasn't answered. Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister, has made a few, as one questioner alluded to, suggestions about how people might adjust their own conduct, talking about, for example, using public transport more to conserve fuel supplies for those who don't have the option to use public transport. If you're hitting the road, don't take more fuel than you need. Just fill up like you normally would. Think of others in your community, people in the bush and in critical industries. Switch to catching the train or the bus or the tram. I mean, sometimes he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. So you could say Keir Starmer should have made more substantive suggestions about what people can do. And then you would have headlines tomorrow saying, Prime Minister says catch a bus to ameliorate impact of war. War on motorists probably would be part of it. And that, I felt, was a really sad question from the BBC, the opening question from the BBC about the price of petrol next September. I really pulling into the sort of right-wing media line on this, as if all of the outlets that were desperate for war and hideously rude about Keir Starmer's decision not to join it are now trying to claim that he's somehow responsible for the price of petrol. But there may well be things you feel he should have said that he didn't say. So I want your overviews and your critiques, whether positive or negative, of what is actually quite a moment, even if it doesn't always feel like that. Oh, here's a phrase that currently warms the cockles of my heart. Ash in Northampton is on the line. Now, if you don't know Ash, he's provided us with by far the best analysis of the situation in the Strait of Hormuz, particularly with reference to mines, than I've heard anywhere else on the UK media. Such is the nature of this programme that he rings us. We don't ring him. But he's moved on from his Mystery Hour days into contributions of extraordinary quality, not least because he's a former Merchant Navy chief officer who has subsequently moved into training up future generations of Merchant Navy officers. And it is very much an issue of naval and mercantile business that defines the Strait of Hormuz. Ash, I don't even need to ask you a question. I'll just hand you the floor and you just talk about why you've rung in today.
Okay, thank you, James. I didn't want to ring in today, but there's two things that Starmer said in that speech that were kind of throwaway, which everyone needs to pay attention to. He talked about insurance and he talked about safety and the trade-off between the two. The last time we were talking about that in any serious sense was, let's take the Falklands War,
yeah,
where merchant vessels were commandeered to take troops down. What happened was the government created a new category. Well, it wasn't a new, it's always been there, but they activated the category of war risk insurance, where the ship's crew, the ship hull, etc., was all underwritten by the government. So they put up the money to do it. The disastrous consequence of that was the Atlantic Conveyor, which was hit and sunk, which, you know, huge, huge tragedy, with some loss of life.
Yes.
Now, what we're discussing, the reason this is important, you mentioned those 35 countries are all going to sit down. If they're going to activate the war risk insurance, those 35 countries will then underwrite the hulls and the cargo. What that doesn't do is that doesn't take into account the safety factor. Merchant seafarers under international law are perfectly entitled to refuse to sail if they believe it is unsafe. Their lives are more important than the ship and the cargo under maritime regulations. In the terms of hierarchy, it's safety of life, safety of marine property, and then protection of the environment in that order. And that's the way we're taught to think. So they can provide all the insurance in the world. They can provide all of the underwriting, and the south end of the Strait of Hormuz is currently an active mine zone. If you then try to sail north, you are then into aerial coverage of shore-based short-range missiles. You are at risk of the fast boat attack from the Iranian Republican Guard.
Mm.
They can provide the money. They can't reimburse people's lives. What you're talking about here, like, again,
I understand what you're saying. I think everybody
does. Without the US Navy and that kind of might, even 35 countries coming together and saying, we're all going to try and do this, you need the backing of some huge resources. This is going to take an awful lot of money, time, and resource to achieve. And even then, there's still no guarantee that the safety aspect can be met to guarantee the transit.
And even with the US Navy, there wouldn't be guarantees.
Precisely, because you're still looking at, you know, are they providing adequate air coverage? Is there the correct swept channels to be able to transit? Do we have good escort availability to be able to intercept fast boat?
So what about the other option then? And forgive me if I'm being stupid, but some sort of diplomatic settlement with Iran, which, I mean, sounds obnoxious in one sense, but it is where we were a month ago in another.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I went back and read the terms of the Iran nuclear deal.
Yes.
What they've done is they've now effectively set up a toll booth in the ocean, which was something that they were pretty much prohibited from doing under those terms.
This is the agreement that Barack Obama's administration negotiated and that Donald Trump set fire to during his first administration.
Correct. Yeah. And part of it was freedom of navigation, and it was a small clause, but it was mentioned. That's gone now. The Iranians have no reason not to try and exert their will. I believe they passed a law a couple of days ago, actually, about charging people for the use of the strait.
Yeah, they did.
Now, that's not enforceable.
They even posted a slightly comical meme about it as well, showing sort of great sums of cash pouring into Iranian coffers.
Now, that's not enforceable under international law, but it's a bargaining chip. It's a way for them to, if anyone ever does come to the table, this is our position, you meet us somewhere in the middle. It's actually a very smart strategic move on their part. Something they've wanted to do for a long time.
Yeah, and something they couldn't have done under the terms of the deal that Donald Trump destroyed.
No. So, you know, I genuinely empathise with Starmer on this. Like, it is a huge, huge problem in terms of logistics, maritime capability, freedom of navigation. And the only way, diplomatic solution is fine if you discount the fact that you're also having to deal with a loose cannon on the deck, which is Donald Trump. Who knows what he's going to do tomorrow?
So even if the 35 countries that Starmer was talking about were to further decouple from the US and Israeli war, then the existence of Donald Trump, and to a lesser extent Benjamin Netanyahu, would potentially imperil any resolution or settlement that was reached by the rest of the world, I'm going to say, cautiously.
Correct. And he spends his entire time sounding off about potentially leaving NATO, potentially pulling out of the UN, etc., etc. You have to take these threats seriously. Mm. And if you're trying to forecast what's going to happen, you have to factor in that level of chaos, which to any sort of logistics network or merchant shipping network, you spend your entire time trying to reduce risk, and he just brings in so much risk with every post and with every uncertain action that you can't account for it. And I don't know what those 35 countries can do outside of creating a UN resolution, creating a NATO resolution, and enforcing it by naval means. It's the only way to guarantee the safety, regardless of the insurance underwriting that any government wishes to take.
What would that mean, Ash? Forgive me for not knowing already. So how would that resolution be enacted? If Iran were to breach it, what would follow?
Can we use the euphemism wider regional conflict again?
Okay. So Iran would be made to understand that if they didn't reopen the Strait of Hormuz, then all bets are off.
Well, or, you know, if they interfere with the reopening of the southern end, which could be done by task force. Yep. So ignoring their territorial waters, ignoring their influence, and just going after the southern end and reopening that, do not interfere with it under pain of X.
Did you feel that Starmer, and obviously he can't go into the sort of granular detail that you have, but did you feel that he was cognizant of the bigger picture from the way that he spoke? Because sometimes we attack politicians for caution when caution is actually what we need. And also an absence of, I mean, this is why many people are invoking the ghost of Boris Johnson and thanking their gods that he's nowhere near the levers of power at the moment, because the last thing you want to hear is sort of gung-ho saber-rattling when, A, there are so many moving parts, and B, as you've made clear, almost all of them could detonate an explosion.
Yes. I think he did quite well. Like, right. He mentioned three different states of government, you know, the Foreign Office, the Defense Office, and, you know, the diplomatic side of it. It's not going to be solved by sending a warship and saber-rattling. Similarly, it's not going to be only solved by diplomatic resolution. It is a very Yeah, we joke often that Trump's playing 4D chess. Like, this is four-dimensional chess with the stakes being pretty much the global economy.
Yeah. Just finally, because I'm late for the news, but that's a testament to the quality of your contribution, for which I'm grateful. And I'd recommend the thread that Ash has shared on Blue Sky this morning, and the link to the much bigger article on LinkedIn that's there as well. You can follow him on there. I won't say your surname on the radio, but if you follow me on Blue Sky, you'll be able to find it very easily, because I linked to it earlier today. Just in conclusion, and to clarify, that you don't see, because I think of the unpredictability of Trump and the bellicose nature of Netanyahu, you don't see this being ended by treaty, as in treaty among a cooperative treaty rather than an ultimatum type treaty.
I
thought
that
was a good question.
Yeah, I see it being ended by exclusionary treaty.
Go on.
Which, I don't know if that's a thing, I'm not a lawyer, but
no.
excluding other actors and only dealing with those 35 countries.
Yeah, so that's it. So yeah, I'm reading your mind. So that would involve further decoupling from the United States and Israel and signing a deal with Iran in conjunction with 34 actual allies that would involve a reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, with the obviously the insurance industry, the merchant navy, the maritime industry, keeping very, very close eyes on the madness of Trump and Netanyahu.
Precisely, and possibly leaving the door open to 2028.
Yeah,
reopening the negotiations with, you know, hopefully someone who is less volatile.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you answered the question in the way that you did, because it means that I did actually understand almost everything that you said previously. And if I did, then everybody else did as well. You were a star, Ash. Seriously, thank you so much for this. I mean, the superlative nature of the praise that is coming in for you on the switchboard can only be echoed by me completely. That was just brilliant. Thank you. 5 minutes after 11 is the time. More of your thoughts. You don't have to be his standard. I'm flipping not. But just about what is changing and what we are keenest to see happen next after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister has stressed that Britain is well placed to weather the economic storm caused by the war in Iran. Sir Keir Starmer says de-escalation and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz remains his top priorities. Sir Keir has insisted he is working on contingencies to help with energy bills if the conflict extends into future months. Speaking in Downing Street, he told LBC's political editor Natasha Clark, measures are in place for the short term.
One of the things that's really important for me to get across to the public is that their bills are coming down by £100 on average, and they're staying down until the end of June, whatever happens in the conflict. And I repeat that for a reason, and that is because I'm not sure everybody has heard that, and I want as many people as possible to know that that's the case, because I know they're going to be anxious.
The Prime Minister also moved to defend NATO after President Trump said he's strongly considering pulling the US out of the alliance. Donald Trump has called the bloc a paper tiger and also claimed the UK doesn't have a navy. In response, Sir Keir Starmer said he won't be pressured by what he described as noise and will act in the UK's interests. An LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that are not being registered with the regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. In one case, a 15-year-old girl was sexually abused by two staff members at a home in County Durham. Our crime correspondent Andy Hughes confronted the owner of the now closed firm.
I asked them on the inquiry and I said, was there anything I could have done to have stopped this? And the police officer, he said, no, Paul.
Well, I'll tell you how you could have stopped it. Looking into these and not employing two convicted criminals to look after the most vulnerable children in society. That's how you could have prevented it, Paul.
The Department for Education says providers operating outside of the law face serious consequences. You can read more on the LBC app. A man who was charged after a car hit pedestrians in Derby city centre has been remanded into custody after appearing in court this morning. Seven people were seriously injured in Friargate in the early hours of Saturday. Sandhu Ponachan, who's 36 and from Alverston in the city, is facing charges including grievous bodily harm with intent. And the NHS in England is to prescribe the weight loss jab Wegovy to more than a million overweight patients at risk of heart attacks and strokes. The health watchdog NICE has recommended the drug, saying it offers an extra layer of protection. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 184 at £10,360. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK. Cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
This Easter, enjoy Tesco finest Prosecco Rosé. 25% off when you buy six or more bottles of wine or fizz with your Tesco Club card. Just the savings you need this Easter. Because every little helps. Drink aware 18 plus. Majority of larger stores and 6th of April. Club card or app required. Exclusions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 9 minutes after 11 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and I think in honour of Ash's contribution we'll reset and go down a road that I was thinking of going down but didn't necessarily have the confidence to do until he clarified some of the key points for us. So we are in a moment of extraordinary peril as a nation and to a slightly lesser extent as a planet, as a world. And Keir Starmer's hand is the one on the tiller. He is the one that is steering a course through this mess, for good or for ill. And the course that he is steering has come to something of a fork. It is now, I think, impossible to maintain warm relations with both the United States, as run by Donald Trump, and Europe and other allies. So the Strait of Hormuz, I'm going to keep this simple because that's the only way that I can understand it, all right? Apologies if it's too simple for you. But the Strait of Hormuz is like an absolutely essential artery. If blood does not flow through that artery, then you will have a heart attack. You won't die necessarily, but you'll be in all sorts of trouble. You have to get blood flowing through that artery. You have to get ships passing through that passage. If you want to make the world less reliant on that passage or you want to deploy alternative routes, that's great, but it's not going to solve anything in the short to medium term. Iran exercises control over that passage for geopolitical, geographical and military reasons. And obviously political reasons as well. It's one of those scenarios in which David has advantages even over Goliath. But the nature of the geography of the coastline and the sovereignty of Iran means that they can essentially put their boot upon the throat or the artery. They can pinch the artery. They can stop stuff from passing through it on a scale that is detrimental to the entire body. To the entire world, particularly to the economic interests, for the purposes of our conversation, of the West. And Keir Starmer, along with 34 other... There's no PMQs today, in case you were wondering. They're on recess. Keir Starmer has identified two priorities internationally. One is de-escalation, over which he has less control than he does over two, which is the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. I think, and I'm being a little bit cautious, in case I say something so stupid that the very first caller to the program shoots it down in flames, but that's my job, you know. Sometimes I've got to stick my head above the parapet and run the risk of getting covered in rotten tomatoes. I think we are edging ever closer to a moment where countries that aren't America and Israel, okay? I think we are edging closer to a moment, and the Spanish Prime Minister has kind of led the way on this. The French Prime Minister has moved into spaces that are more negative towards the United States than anything we've previously seen. I'm talking about European pushback. France has blocked Israeli planes from flying weapons through its airspace. Italy has refused last-minute permissions for US bombers to land in Sicily. Spain has denied the US use of its bases and airspace for the war. That's particularly hurtful for Donald Trump because one of the bases in Spain where American personnel are sometimes posted is called Moron. So that must be very, very close to Donald Trump's heart, that airbase. He probably thinks they've named it after him, just as he keeps naming things in the United States after himself. But it is different for the United Kingdom because US flags fly at places like Mildenhall and Fairford. They are sort of bases under joint command, or even, I think, and you'll know better than this, under US command. So you can't draw a full path. There are two crucial distinctions to be made before we talk about the tightrope that Keir Starmer is trying to walk. The first is the difference between defence and offence. So Keir Starmer refuses to be involved in offensive actions, but he will allow our bases to be used for defensive actions. And defensive actions include attacks on positions that are attacking us or our allies, okay? So that's a crucial thing to understand, the difference between defence and attack. It's a blurred line, and goodness knows the Iranian ambassador was trying to blur it yesterday while simultaneously praising or thanking Keir Starmer for his original position while warning that letting the Americans use air bases, albeit for legal actions, that's distinction number two. Keir Starmer is allowing legal actions to be undertaken from British territory, not illegal actions. I don't think that's moot. I don't think that's splitting hairs. The difference between what's legal and what's illegal is really, really important, unless you don't think the law matters, in which case you're lost and you're listening to the wrong program. So you've got the distinction between attack and defense. You've got the distinction between legal and illegal. These things are absolutely crucial to understand. And then the sort of final piece of the jigsaw, or the final piece of the position that we find ourselves in now, is the difference between acting alongside the United States and Israel and acting independently, edging closer to Europe and edging further away from the United States. The UK has allowed the US to use its bases, but, and of course has been publicly admonished by Donald Trump anyway. So it pushes everything to me, and this is what I'm holding back from saying out loud in case I'm going to make an absolute muppet of myself. It pushes us towards a place where countries like France and Spain, who possibly have already chosen, and the United Kingdom and Germany, are going to have to get the Strait of Hormuz open either by launching an almost impossible military operation, war, call it what you prefer, the president does, or they're going to have to try and resurrect the deal that Donald Trump destroyed. And I think that's a really important point that, again, is completely missing from all of the right-wing analysis. They're going to have to try together, collectively, to resurrect the deal that Donald Trump destroyed, that Iran had signed and was widely considered by almost, well, by all international observers and all qualified contributors to the discourse to be following, to be enjoying. So I don't know enough about the world, and even Ash, who clearly knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, was hesitant to say anything strong about the likelihood of being able to do it sine without America, without the United States of America. And then the thing that he was clear about was the absolute unpredictability of both Trump and Netanyahu. Netanyahu is doing a Gaza at the moment in Lebanon. They're razing entire neighborhoods to the ground. And nobody seems to care. It's extraordinary. Some people wondering why Keir Starmer didn't mention that during that speech. It wouldn't necessarily have been relevant, but it would have been nice to know that he's noticed. Literally just moving hundreds of thousands of people. Just get out of your house. Go on, clear off. I'm Benjamin Netanyahu and I want that land, so I'm going to take it. Oh, and I'm not just going to take it. You might have lived there for 30 years, but I'm going to blow it up. I'm going to raise it to the ground. I'm going to call it, it's not called your home anymore. It's just called rubble. That's your new address. Your new address is rubble. And he's doing it with apparent impunity. So God knows what he does next. But in terms of what we do next, it's a hideous regime, right? The Iranian one. But there are a lot of hideous regimes in the world with which we do business. And if we need to, if he's right, if Starmer is right, and the absolute top priority at the moment is just, and it doesn't even sound that toxic, because you do what Barack Obama did, and you negotiate successfully with Iran, collectively, to get the Strait of Hormuz reopened, and you do it whatever America thinks or does. You do it despite Donald Trump, not with Donald Trump, but arguably even because of Donald Trump. So, I mean, you might know more about the geopolitics than I do, and you can tell me immediately why that's unfeasible, but I don't think it is at the moment. I think it's almost unthinkable, because it breaks so completely with what has gone before, but I don't think it's unfeasible. So should the Western powers, without the United States of America and their allies, try to do a deal with Iran now? And if not, what's the alternative? You can't trust Donald Trump as far as you could throw him, can you? We know that. Keir Starmer has let him use bases, a politically difficult decision, a politically controversial decision for a British Prime Minister, and Donald Trump has responded by insulting him day after day after day after day, with traitors and idiots in our media and our political establishment joining in that abuse of our Prime Minister, even as he has gone further than he could have done in support of Donald Trump's madness, but in defence, of course, of British interests and British allies. So, is it time for a deal? Is it? I mean, it's war or jaw, right? Is that how you break it down? Is it jaw, or war? And I'm going to go, it's got to be jaw, right? Who wants a war? Literally, who wants a war? Apart from Benjamin Netanyahu, and not even Donald Trump anymore. Just Benjamin Netanyahu. Who wants a war? I don't think Iran want a war. So do we do a deal? Do we do a deal to get the Strait of Hormuz open? I start the bidding on this and say, hell yes, we do. And we start trying to do it as soon as is humanly possible. And that, I think, is contained within the text and the subtext of what Keir Starmer was saying. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need. I don't like the Iranian regime, but I like even less the fact that Donald Trump's madness has probably strengthened its hand on both the domestic and the world stage. So what does Keir Starmer do now? What do Western interests, detached from the lunacy of the White House, what do they do now? They've got to do a deal. They've got to do a deal. 0345-6060-973.
LBC.
Sounds like a lawnmower, doesn't it? But it's actually the sound of someone's dream coming true right about now. Dreaming is great, but what's better than knowing that this tiny patch of turf is yours and nobody else's? When it's time to realise your dream, at Lloyds we're ready when you are. Britain's number one direct lender for first-time buyers. Mortgages on Lloyds, bank on Lloyds. Based on monthly completion values, June to September 2025. To verify, see lloydsbank.com/bankonlloyds.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This bank holiday, instead of hunting for eggs, hunt for your dream kitchen or bedroom at your local Wren showroom. With up to 60% off our high-quality, fully-built kitchens and all-bedroom units, plus up to 7 years interest-free credit. Made for getting what you really want this Easter. Book your appointment now. Wren. Made for living. Offers apply when you buy 5 or more kitchen units or 3 or more bedroom units. Finance subject to status and minimum spend.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 21 minutes after 11. And the reason why I think I said it was implausible. I beg your pardon. Unthinkable, close to unthinkable, but not implausible, is because of the breach that it would make with previous alliances and with the status quo. If Starmer hadn't been given a speech this morning, I would have gone in on what other countries are doing, because I feel that that is the change in the waters. is the attitude being adopted most obviously by Spain, but subsequently also by France and others. The idea that the old alliance is weakening and crumbling, not from the other end, not from the ludicrous threats of the daft Donald, but from the recognition of wiser, saner heads that he can no longer be relied on. And if Donald Trump can't be relied on, then the United States of America can't be relied on. And if an ally can't be relied upon, they cease really to be an ally. And I honestly think, sorry, I didn't realize I had so much to unravel in my own head today, but if you want to interrupt me, you know what to do. If an ally can't be relied upon, they're no longer an ally. And I think one of the great problems we have in this country is the fact that people can't actually get their tiny little heads around that. Not just the cap doffers and the forelock tuggers, the Trump fluffers, yeah, in the media and in politics, the people who 10 minutes ago were ashamed to be British because Keir Starmer wasn't signing up for this madness. But even normal people, even nice people, people who aren't mad, can't quite conceive of a United Kingdom that is not in lockstep with the United States of America. But at the moment, being in lockstep with the United States of America means being in lockstep with Donald Trump. Our national interest, and that's another thing that Keir Starmer kept talking about, our national interest is served by getting the Strait of Hormuz opened. Donald Trump isn't going to do that, and he isn't going to help us do it. So how can it be done? And I mean, if you think you can answer that question, 03456060973, if you can't, and I'm not sure anybody can really, except perhaps Ash in Northampton, then it becomes this. Do we try and negotiate our way to this, or do we try and bomb our way to it? And I think that's close to a no-brainer, isn't it? 24 minutes after 11 is the time. 03456060973 is the number you need. You shouldn't be so cautious, James writes, Nick. The UK, because you're right, the UK cannot risk harming itself immeasurably and indefinitely by prioritising the relationship with the United States above all else, not in its current deeply errant guise. The coalition of 35 nations needs to negotiate with Iran. The alternative, as outlined brilliantly by Ash, is almost logistically and militarily impossible. It would be worth it just to see the look on Trump's face when he learns from Fox News that only American tankers are not allowed through the Strait. 24 after 11 is the time. Andros is in New Milton. Andros, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello, welcome to your voice, the voice of doom.
The voice of reason, mate. The voice of reason. It's Wednesday. It's the voice of doom on Fridays. Carry on.
That is the trouble, James. It's the voice of reason as well.
Yes.
Oh, God, where do we start? I mean, I was telling my missus the other day, we're being run by a maniac. The world's being run by a madman. I totally agree. On one day, he hates you. The next day, he loves you. You're his best friend. I mean, we can all take the oil now that it's going wrong. You know, it's a disaster, mate. And we've got to make a deal with Iran, I believe. I know it's the devil you know, but what other option is there? And we've got to get a bit closer to Europe.
Hang on, just slow down, because I'm going to put that... No, I mean it, because you're making me think. I'm going to put that on the board. So what other option is there? 03456060973. So I've tried to lay out some options, which I think are probably the most obvious.
Options,
I've only given I've given two options really, which is either war, or jaw. But if you think there is another option, then answer Andros's question, not mine. 03456060973. Because there are ships going through it. There are already ships going through it with Iran's cooperation or connivance. You pays the money, you takes your chances. So it's not shut. It's one of the most ignorant one of the most ignorant contributions I've heard to the entire conversation in the last few weeks was from somebody who seemed to think no ships could get through it. Even Iranian ships couldn't get through it. So it's doable. What are our options? Bomb our way through or talk our way through?
Bomb our way through is ridiculous. Come on, that's so like 1914, you know? It's ridiculous. Come on. As a race, we should grow up. James, I really do believe we should just start. Mate, talk to them. Even, I might sound silly, take them to the pub and have a drink with them. Well, I'm being silly there. But you know what I mean?
Have a hug. They're quite devout Muslims. They'd have to have a dandelion and burdock if you were to take them down the dog and duck, Andros. I don't think that would necessarily be the best place to conduct the conversation. You take care, mate. I like that other question. What other choices there? How hard is this to swallow? What would the obstacles be? I don't see how there's going to be any military passage or path to the kind of... It's the unknowable, isn't it? It's the fact that Trump is a player. Trump is on the board. Trump is absolutely unreliable, delinquent, deranged, all of those things. So even if you were to negotiate something in conjunction with the United States of America, he's almost as likely to set fire to a deal that he's negotiated as he is to a deal that one of his predecessors negotiated, a deal that was working. I don't think I'm going to get close enough to the sycophants and traitors to ask this question, but why do none of them ever talk about the fact that Trump destroyed the deal that was working? Never talk about it. He destroyed the deal that was working. And now we've got no deal at all. And guess what? No deal is not better than a bad deal. Sarah's in Todmorden. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Oh, hiya, James.
Hello. Are you pausing for effect, Sarah, or has the phone line gone down? I think the phone line might have gone down. 28 minutes after 11 is the time. I should give you a quick heads up. Andy Hughes will be with us at 11:45 with more detail on this. I mean, I don't really know what adjectives to use. I don't think it's hyperbole to say it's one of the most disgusting stories that I think we've ever broken on LBC. And you can tell that from the very first line of the story, which I'll share with you shortly. But Simon Marks will be with us at 12:30 as well. Let's try again. Sarah's in Todmorden. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Sorry, James. It's
not your fault. You're not British Telecom.
I don't think I was in control of my mobile, as usual. I remember you floating this idea. I don't know whether it was earlier this week or maybe later on last week.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this for so long, it's hard to remember. I actually think that this is the negotiation is the way forward. I certainly don't think the military option is.
I don't see what else we could argue, really.
Well, we've got to. We make all sorts of deals with the devil. And I would suggest the biggest devil at the moment is sitting in the White House.
Are you certainly not got any claim to any form of moral high ground or any shared interests or shared values that would explain why a British Prime Minister had to staple themselves to the US President or just simply, you know, march in lockstep with them. He doesn't have our interests at heart. He insults our Prime Minister. Who would be shocked if he insulted our King when this god-awful state visit has to go ahead next?
I genuinely think with America, we've seen the tip of the iceberg so far. I think America's lost.
Well, for the duration of the rest of this administration, it is. But I can't quite believe that it's going to go the way of previous civilizations and not recover. But that's probably normality bias on my part. Thank you, Sarah. 11:30 is the time. The question that we're asking is sort of twofold, but Andros introduced a third dimension to it. What do we do to get the Strait of Hormuz open? Do we try to blast our way through? Or do we try to talk our way through? 03456060973. And, as Andros asked, is there another option? Because I genuinely can't currently see one. If there's a choice between those two things, then is it almost a no-brainer? Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has warned the war in Iran will affect the future of the UK, but has insisted the country is well-placed to weather the storm. Speaking in Downing Street this morning, he announced new summits with the European Union, saying that a closer relationship with the EU is key. The Prime Minister also responded to Donald Trump's claim that he's considering pulling the United States out of NATO. Sir Keir Starmer called the bloc the most effective military alliance ever and said he won't be pressured to act outside of the UK's interests. And an LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with the regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve the perfect one instantly. Get £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
Lidl, treat yourself to a whole Easter lunch for eight for under £1.60 per person, with all the tantalising trimmings. That's a leg of lamb, carrots, potatoes, parsnips, mint sauce, and of course, the gravy. Lidl, more to value.
Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. See lidl.co.uk/vendless for details.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders. Book clubbers, are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer, all in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 11 is the time. I sometimes prefer it when he does the big speeches at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we've got a few hours for it to percolate and to think about it. Jones, the engineer who used to work on this program, he used to say something very funny when they were having leadership debates and the audience was forbidden from clapping or showing any signs of approval or disapproval. I presume for reasons of impartiality. And Jones said to me once, he said, oh, I hate it when they're not allowed to clap because I can't tell whether anyone's made a good point or not. I said, well, you're supposed to work that out for yourself, mate. And he goes, yeah, I know, but yeah, it's a lot easier, isn't it, to gauge things by the size of the cheer. And I also quite like at moments like this to be able to see what other people are saying. Not many, a vanishingly and shrinking band of professional commentators, most of whom I now find on Substack as opposed to in national newspapers, certainly. But it's always nice to see what other people think. Before necessarily filtering through and arriving at your own conclusions. But, as I see it, we are distilling things down to a fairly straight choice for Keir Starmer. Does he continue to ally himself, however loosely, with the United States of America and, of course, with Benjamin Netanyahu's Israel, which is currently doing another Gaza, this time in Lebanon? Or does he try to come to an accommodation, an agreement, a deal with Iran that would allow UK ships to join other vessels from other countries passing through the Strait of Hormuz, with, no doubt, a fairly hefty toll or ransom, whichever word you prefer, being paid per ship? Walter is in Utrecht in the Netherlands. Walter, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. I was really listening to you first time. Caller, but long time listener from your show. Very much a fan of your show.
Thank you, mate.
But the question is, why would Iran make a deal with us at the moment? They hold all the cards. We've got nothing to give to them.
Money. Also, the Strait of Hormuz is only worth something tactically with the promise that it will reopen one day. I mean, the permanently closed Strait of Hormuz is worth nothing to them. But they get a dip. I mean, the diplomatic coup of separating the United States of America and Israel from traditional and historic allies and seeing them go it alone in a diplomatic adventure to secure safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz, regardless of the millions of bucks that they'd pay, that we would pay per ship, I think would be a huge victory, wouldn't it?
Of course it would be a huge victory, but they also like to see the decline of the West, and that is also very much an incentive for them. They can do dealings with Russia, India, China. So why would they deal with us if they can send the ships through to China and make their money and see the decline of the West? So I think it takes two faults. You need to get to two.
Well, I know, because I understand how your brain's working, but I think it's fairly easy to answer by simply asking, why did they used to let us go through if they're dedicated to the destruction of the West? Why was it all unfolding relatively hassle-free until, spoiler alert, because a month ago. If they can't export oil, I mean, that is part of the answer to the question, but also, if they would, it was all going on perfectly happily a month ago, this desire to dismantle Western hegemony wasn't on display then. Why would it be on display now? And also, the West is now a meaningless term in this kind of conversation, isn't it? Because the West, most of the West, has so successfully detached itself from Donald Trump. So the West doesn't mean what it used to mean.
No, let's agree on that. That's very much true. I think that's from the moment Mr. Trump stepped into office, there was no West anymore. And we're only slowly starting to realize that. I think a lot of people saw it clearly, but politicians, yes, of course, need to go a certain way. But another thing why they would like stability is because they need to focus their power internally. Iran always needs to most of their power internally, because else they get dissidents. So in the end, it would favor them to, of course, not have put their hands tied by the Strait of Hormuz.
Yes.
But at the moment, I would not see why they would make a deal with us, because they're already in the mess. They've got much more to gain if they prolong this.
Well, why have they allowed, according to reports, Malaysian ships are now passing through the Strait of Hormuz, and
because
not even
Malaysia's paying for it.
No, they're not, actually. If you'd let me finish.
Oh, sorry.
No, I didn't know this either. Someone just told me, but I've looked it up to double-check. The Malaysian government, a trickle of cargo ships and tankers, mostly Iranian, of course, but some from Thailand and China have made it through the strait since the war, and it was reported yesterday that Malaysian ships have joined them, according to their own government, not paying any tolls. That's in the Jakarta Post this morning.
Okay, I understand that, but Malaysia is not in any way supporting Israel, for example.
No, but nor is Spain, and nor is France, and nor is...
No, but they are part of the EU, and EU is supporting Israel.
And you think Iran is going to see it like that? I don't know that you're right, because then I go back to the question of why were they okay with it a month ago?
Because they have got internal problems also.
Yeah, but that's an argument against what you're saying, Walter. The bigger the internal problems, the more the appetite for a solution to the external problems. And if the external problems aren't a problem because they actually want to dismantle the West, why weren't they doing it a month ago?
Because
you can't come back again, man. Honestly, this is outrageous. Come on, go on. You're like Johan Cruyff.
No, because I agree with you that most dictatorial regimes, of course, try to focus the enemy outside, as Russia does. But how much of their internal power is left now they get bombed? And they get...
I would have thought that a negotiated settlement it changes everything, because of course the notion of US or Israel deployments in an area where their former and possibly still current allies are doing their thing becomes even more ridiculous, becomes even more dangerous. I mean, listen, I shouldn't be dismissive, because we are discussing a vacuum. This is what Donald Trump has created, an area where both precedent, tradition, and the old world order no longer apply. And as you say, Walter, I'm not sure everybody has fully grasped just how complete that breach is. We're still sitting there thinking, normality will soon be resumed. Normal service will soon be resumed. It won't. It doesn't matter whether he's telling the truth or not. The simple fact that Donald Trump publicly contemplates the possibility of leaving NATO, the simple fact that he publicly contemplates it, is a game changer the likes of which we have not seen in the post-war period. I don't think he'd be able to without congressional approval, and he wouldn't be able to get congressional approval, but it doesn't matter, because he is saying to allies, screw you. And allies don't know how to respond to that, or at least they didn't. And I wonder whether signs from Spain, signs from France, and signs even increasingly from Keir Starmer suggest that they are shaping up to say that. Steve's in Caterham. Thank you, Walter. I look forward to your second call to the programme. Steve's in Caterham. Steve, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I'm just wondering about the bases that Americans are using of ours.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
And how Iraq is ever likely to say
Iran do a
deal with us to let our oil through,
yeah,
or whatever, while we're still anything to do with America's attacks.
Yes, I think this is a really important
point. You know what
point.
I mean?
Yes, I do. I think it's the biggest fly in the ointment that I'm trying to apply to the body politic this morning. Not least because of what the Iranian ambassador said yesterday, which I had in front of me about 20 minutes ago, but I can't find now. So what we've got in Fairford is more B-52H Stratofortress bombers coming into this country in preparation for deployment as part of Operation Epic Failure. And on the other side of this battle, we have the Iranian ambassador saying, I think yesterday, that he welcomed Keir Starmer's original decision not to get involved, but that he could foresee attacks upon British positions as a consequence of making these bases available. And that's where, I mean, the distinction between legal and illegal, between defence and attack, they're important distinctions, but they're not cast in stone, are they, Steve? They're not things that people are forced and compelled to follow. The Iranian regime can choose not to recognise those distinctions and say you might be acting legally and only in defence of your positions, but we're still very cross with you. Therefore, you can't send your ships through the Strait of Hormuz.
A B-52, I can't see how a B-52 is ever just defending anything.
It's a B-50. Well, no, you're attacking the things that attack you. Now, listen, I don't want to get all philosophical about things, but when you're attacking the things that attack you, you get to chalk it up as defence, don't you? I mean, I'm not splitting hairs. It is defence. No. If you punch me in the face, Steve, and please don't, let's work strictly in the theoretical. But if you punch me in the face and I punch you back, that is a different act from you punching me in the face unprovoked in the first place.
So
it's defence. It's self-defence. So anyway, we got enough analogies and metaphors up and running without you and me punching it. Without you and me punching each other. But he's right. I mean, that is why I think. Penny's dropping. That's why Trump has stapled de-escalation to the Strait of Hormuz. Because if there's a de-escalation, in other words, if Trump has stopped, and then the complicity, if you want to use that word, of UK involvement in the defence element of this war that Trump can't call a war is diminished, there's no longer any need for planes to take off from Fairford because Trump has packed up and gone home with his tail between his legs while pretending that he's secured yet another massive victory. Would this be the ninth war? I hope he hasn't realised yet that if he starts wars and then ends them in disgrace and humiliation, he can add them to the list of the wars that he claims he's actually ended. But if that were to happen, then we wouldn't be on the hook that Steve describes when it comes to negotiating safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz. I want more calls on this, but I also want to draw your attention next to an extraordinary and rather horrible story that our crime correspondent Andy Hughes has broken exclusively on LBC this morning. So be prepared for that. 12:30, Simon Marks will be here. He's in the country, so he'll be here in the flesh, which is always a particular pleasure. But I'm still, I think, minded to wrestle with the questions that we've been asking since Keir Starmer finished his speech, with a possible side order of state visit. But that's up to you, to be honest. If you want to have a side order of a state visit, if you don't feel that the conversation about the Strait of Hormuz and the reopening thereof is sufficiently nutritious or substantive, then we'll throw a bit of state visit in as well, like a kind of conversational side salad.
This is LBC.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to 100,000 euros per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app, the XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Find me somebody to love.
At Dreams until Tuesday. The more you spend, the more you save. With up to £500 off. Dreams. Love your bed.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
At
Lidl, find your move with the new Cribbit running range. Grab a pair of carbon running shoes for only £39.99 with advanced EVA soles and carbon plates. These and other Cribbit products will get you over the line for sure. Available in store now. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting, the wind's in your hair. You're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you've saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm, we'll take due scoops, per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12 minutes to 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you know any sort of racist grifters who pretend to care about Christian values, then do let them know that the Pope has joined all of the voices calling for Donald Trump to cease his madness in Iran, urging him to look for an off-ramp, which is an odd phrase for a Pope to use, but of course he's an American Pope, which is easy to forget, isn't it? More on that, no doubt, a little later in the programme or a little later today on LBC. I'm going to issue what is correctly known as a trigger warning, something else that has been denuded and diminished by idiots pretending not to understand what it means. It means that we're about to talk about something that is potentially very traumatic, particularly if you have been a victim of sexual abuse, because of all the stories that LBC has broken while I have been sitting behind this microphone, this is among the grimmest. And I'm going to read you the first line of Andy Hughes's report up on the LBC website at the moment, and you'll understand why I am just once again cautioning you that we're about to discuss events that are truly, truly hideous. And here's the first line of Andy's story. A 15-year-old girl was brutally sexually abused over several hours by two ex-soldiers at an illegal care home in County Durham. And I'm going to begin, Andy, if I may, by asking you, what on earth is an illegal care home?
An illegal care home is a property, effectively a pop-up house, that is not registered with Ofsted. However, vulnerable children are still sent there. So, James, I started looking into this 3 months ago when a contact told me that illegal children's care homes are operating on an industrial scale in towns and cities across the UK, and that many of them were employing convicted criminals to look after the most vulnerable kids in society. So I set off in this journey, and at first I faced a complete wall of silence from several local authorities that didn't even acknowledge that these places existed. So I teamed up with the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, and we discovered that there are more than 800 of these illegal care homes that have not been registered with the regulator, Ofsted. Now, many of them are making huge profits, with local authorities paying an average of up to £10,000 a week to care for a single child. What I really wanted to do was find out who is looking after these often traumatised and troubled children. And I came across one shocking case. This 15-year-old girl who was transported hundreds of miles from South Wales up to an unregulated care home in County Durham. And staff were told she was a high risk of child sexual exploitation. Two carers who were meant to be protecting the child plied her with alcohol and drugs and sexually abused her for several hours, leaving her with serious injuries. I gained access to the property. This is the first time a journalist has been inside one of these care homes. Neighbours told me that the carers used to routinely beat up the children in the gardens. I was told one story, James, that one child tried to escape this place through a bedroom window. And instead of helping this distressed child, the carers there filmed the child and started laughing and then placed a bin for the child to jump into. Now, there were holes in this property. I found holes that were drilled into the bedroom doors, which allowed the carers to spy on these children. So Liam Ramsey and Stephen Hurst, both in their 40s, they were found guilty last year of 18 offences, including sexual activity with a child, intentional strangulation and supplying Class A drugs. But, so they're in jail now, so yeah. I wanted to find out who hired them. Now, records show that the property was under the control of a company called Map Adventures. On their company's house site, this is basically activities for children. That's how they advertise it. And the director is a man called Paul McCrory. He's also ex-military. I discovered that he's living in Cyprus, and to my surprise, he agreed to speak to me. Right. So he joined me on a video call from a local bar, and here's how that conversation went. Stephen Hurst had two convictions, one for affray and one for battery. One relates to beating up his wife. Liam Ramsey, two offences of assault, occasioning actual bodily harm, drink driving and growing cannabis. Does that sound to you like a CV appropriate for caring for vulnerable children?
I have friends that were sent to jail in my regiment who are now serving captains and majors. One's an Apache pilot. In this modern day, if you're going to go down that route, then everyone's going to be unemployed.
Yeah, but Paul, these two men went on to rape, drug a young girl. And you seem to be excusing yourself for employing them.
The only apology that I'm going to give is that they didn't get there. They were held in remand. If they were released, they were going to get removed, and I was going to deal with them personally. And my justice would have been swift. I tell you that.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
Use your imagination.
Well, why don't you enlighten me, Paul?
It would have been swiftly dispatched.
Do you take any responsibility for what they did to this young girl?
I didn't interview them. I didn't, and this is not passing the buck of any sorts.
It sounds like it.
It comes down to me. I was 3,000 miles away when this incident happened because I lived away.
Yeah, but you're responsible for this care home, Paul, aren't you? The book stops with you.
I asked him on the inquiry and I said, is there anything I could have done to have stopped this? And he said, no, Paul.
Well, I'll tell you how you could have stopped it. Looking into these and not employing two convicted criminals to look after the most vulnerable children in society. That's how you could have prevented it, Paul. McCrory said he didn't know about the carers' abuse, but he did admit to knowing at least one of them had criminal records. Now, despite there being over 800 of these illegal care homes, I can't find any public records of illegal care home owners being successfully prosecuted. And it is the job of Ofsted to do that. When I contacted them, they refused to comment on this specific case, but said they are working hard to investigate unregistered children's homes.
I don't know where to start, except, and it feels inappropriate to congratulate you on the quality of your reporting or the scale of the story that you have unearthed and shared. But I mean, let me see if I've understood a couple of the elements of this correctly, Andy. Councils have a tragic number of young people in need of homing, housing, and the system is unfit for purpose.
Correct.
And therefore, if I were to claim that I have got a home and to contact the council, they would send me children without asking questions that should have been asked, without checking that I'm licensed, they're so desperate to find somewhere to put these poor children that they don't do the due diligence that we'd expect everyone
well,
to do?
Well, clearly not in many of these cases. There is a legal loophole which allows councils to send vulnerable children
28
days. Exactly, 28 days. However, these kids are staying there more than a year.
So on the day they arrive,
28
no
days.
Law is being broken. On day 29, they move into legally questionable territory, but of course, everyone's taken their eye off the ball by
now. Yeah, no one's checking. No one's checking. And then we now have thousands of children caught up in this illegal, unregulated care system.
This is absolutely heartbreaking. And the employment of obviously unfit people for jobs like this, is there a loophole there, or is that again just a failure?
Because it's a private company, they can employ who they want. If it was a regulated care home, that the law bans them from employing anyone with a criminal conviction for violence. But in a private company, you can do what you want.
So regulation wouldn't kick in until day 29. Legal status wouldn't kick in until day 29. And proper safe checks, safeguarding issues and checks upon staff and qualifications and suitability wouldn't kick in until day 29 either.
On day 29, that child shouldn't be there.
I know.
That child should be sent to
On day 28,
yes.
It doesn't matter that the staff have got no qualifications. It doesn't matter that they've got criminal records.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter that the company has no pedigree or no background in this. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, this is huge.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, listen, I've been...
To be fair, I'm sure that there'll be people in government who are just as shocked and disgusted by this as we are.
Yeah, well, why the Department of Education haven't done more on this is a mystery to me. Mm. They sent us a statement saying that they're going to crack down on this and they're applying loads of money into this. But for people like this young 15-year-old girl, that's far too late.
But, and I say this very, very cautiously, if we shut them all down tomorrow,
they'll be homeless.
Where would these children go?
They'll be homeless. It's a total broken system.
And do we have, I mean, you've told us the story of this poor girl, Alice. Mm. Do we have any reason to suspect that that there may be other victims of abuse as opposed to simply victims of a broken system?
Yes, I've been told that there have been several incidents where young children have been abused in these unregulated care homes. And I hope to bring you more on this story in the future. This is the first of, I hope, many stories on this issue.
I will. In pursuit of resolution and justice, good. But obviously, in the knowledge that it's going to involve similarly harrowing territory, not good at all. Andy, I should remind you, isn't just our crime correspondent, he's also a co-host of the Crime Agents podcast, which you can get hold of via the LBC app. I'm just a little bit also, if not confused, because you've done a comprehensive report on it, but of how these men got signed up, as it were, by the... agency, if we can call it that, the company that's now gone bankrupt, I think, I understand there's no requirement to check on them if the children are only going to be there for 28 days, but reading between the lines of your report, it looks to me as if Liam Ramsey and Stephen Hurst were trying to insinuate themselves into situations where they could commit the kind of crimes that they'd ended up committing.
Yeah, and, well, listen, Paul McGrory, who is the owner of this illegal care home, I asked him what checks he did. He said, I knew they had criminal records, and I asked around. I asked my mates. They said they were good lads. He also said that he looked for references from their previous companies.
Which were not care companies, or we don't even know, do we?
I don't know.
So there's no way these men should have been allowed anywhere near any 15-year-old children, let alone deeply vulnerable ones living in council care.
No.
Oh, man. Okay, thank you. And I wish you well. I don't know what it's like to do investigations and reports like this firsthand. I found it harrowing enough to helping you get them in front of people secondhand, but well done. It is 12 noon.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Keir Starmer has warned the war in Iran will affect the future of the UK, but has insisted the country is well placed to weather the storm. Speaking in Downing Street this morning, he announced several new summits with the European Union. He told reporters that a closer relationship with the EU is key.
Brexit did deep damage to our economy, and the opportunities to strengthen our security and cut the cost of living are simply too big to ignore. And I can tell you that at that summit, the UK will not just ratify existing commitments made at last year's summit. We want to be more ambitious. Closer economic cooperation. Closer security cooperation.
The Prime Minister also responded to Donald Trump's claim that he's considering pulling the United States out of NATO. Sir Keir Starmer called the bloc the most effective military alliance ever and said he won't be pressured to act outside of the UK's interests.
An LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with the regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. In one case, a 15-year-old girl was sexually abused by two staff members at a home in County Durham. Care expert Chris Wilde has told us it's a national crisis.
It's a national catastrophe. No one's talking about it. This is one of the biggest scandals we have in this country right now, about children in care being dumped in squalor and abused by criminal gangs, and nobody's doing anything about it to stop it.
The Department for Education says providers operating outside of the law face serious consequences. You can read more on this story on the LBC app. A 36-year-old man has appeared in court accused of dangerous driving after seven people were hit by a car in Derby. Sandhu Ponachan, who's from Alverston, has also been charged with grievous bodily harm with intent. He's been remanded in custody. Increases in the mandatory national living wage for nearly 2.7 million workers have come into force today. For employees over the age of 21, their hourly wage will go up by 50 pence to £12.71. Those aged 18 to 20 will see their hourly pay rise by 85 pence to £10.85. And the Met Office has issued a yellow weather warning for wind over the Easter weekend. The warnings cover all of Scotland and Northern Ireland, as well as a swathe of northwest of England and parts of North Wales. The alerts come into force at 6 p.m. on Saturday and run until midday on Easter Sunday. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 182 points at 10,359. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south with a high today of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his nine lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Just a quick final word on Andy's harrowing story about illegal children homes and abuse of children therein. If you feel any more or less disgust at the crimes described when they are committed by white men than you do when they are committed by brown men, or vice versa, then you are a racist. I think it's important to make this point because I don't think there are going to be marches or questions in the House of Commons or political movements or banners or protests outside military barracks as a consequence of the hideous crimes visited upon this poor girl by two former soldiers who happen to have white skin. But if you feel more disgusted when similar crimes are committed by men who have brown skin, that is, let's not beat about the bush here, that is because you are a racist. And just because you're getting permission to be racist from all sorts of figures in this country at the moment, who used to give the impression that they knew better, doesn't change the fact that you are. These people are scum. Child abusers are scum. And my definition of scum is completely colourblind. And with respect, yours should be too. It really, really should, because if it's not, well, you diminish. You diminish the horror of what was done by these two men on this occasion. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. I would like to find a way back into that, possibly with Andy's help or something. It doesn't lend itself immediately to radio phone-in territory, but the world of unregulated care homes strikes me as something that we might be able to shine a light into together. If you've got any ideas about how we might achieve that, do get in touch. Of course, it's not just racist. It puts you in the position of being an apologist for child sexual abuse. If you are angrier when it's committed by brown men than you are when it's committed by white men, or if you're angrier when it's committed by white men than you are when it's committed by brown men, you are betraying and insulting the survivors in those cases, and you are diminishing the horrors of the crimes committed against them. And I'm mentioning this because I honestly think some decent people might not understand that because of the amount, I could be wrong, maybe you're not decent at all, but the amount of effort that is currently being put into making you care about child sexual abuse perpetrated by brown men, while almost, it seems sometimes, giving a free pass to white men. The numbers of people in the EDL who had hideous histories without anybody apparently being particularly disturbed by it were off the charts, but the number of us who A, noticed and B, cared was pitifully small. So, 6 minutes after 12 is the time. We come back to the overarching question of whether or not the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz is something that should now be sought by Western powers, detached from, uncoupled from the United States of America and Benjamin Netanyahu's Israel, by negotiation and diplomacy, as opposed to by war. And Donald Trump encouraging the United Kingdom and others to break the law yesterday. International law, just as he has almost certainly done, just as Benjamin Netanyahu has done. But I don't know quite how that would work, whether or not it would, but I mean, it's not even feasible. We'd need some sort of European army. And you know what all the racist and Vladimir Putin apologists used to say about a European army. I don't know whether they still do or not, because they've all gone quite quiet this week, given the reality of the war in Iran that they were in favour of has begun to settle. So, That's question number one. Question number two is going to be about the King's visit, which is a slightly more nuanced question in a way, because there is quite a lot going on there that I will remind you of shortly. But let's begin by refreshing our memories of what Keir Starmer said on the subject of the Strait of Hormuz and the priorities with which he is currently wrestling.
The most effective way we can support the cost of living in Britain is to push for de-escalation in the Middle East and a reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, which is such a vital route for energy. To that end, we're exploring each and every diplomatic avenue that is available to us. The Foreign Secretary and the Chancellor have met their counterparts in the G7. The Defence Secretary has been in the Middle East speaking to our partners. And the UK has now brought together 35 nations around our statement of intent to push as one for maritime security across the Gulf. And today I can announce that later this week, the Foreign Secretary will host a meeting that brings those nations together for the first time, where we will assess all viable diplomatic and political measures that we can take to restore freedom of navigation, guarantee the safety of trapped ships and seafarers, and resume the movement of vital commodities. Following that meeting, we will also convene our military planners to look at how we can marshal our capabilities and make the Strait accessible and safe after the fighting has stopped. Because I do have to level with people on this. This will not be easy.
Indeed it won't, 9 minutes after 12. I suppose we could have added to the list of questions the one about how do you get the Strait of Hormuz opened, but you'd have to have got up very early this morning to have a crack at that. So is it through diplomacy or through war? I don't think anyone's going to claim it should be through war. I really don't. I mean, it seems an absurd and an impossible task. I don't know how plausible diplomacy is, but it has to be ultimately plausible, doesn't it? Because it can't stay shut forever. So when it gets reopened, it's either because the Iranian regime has been bombed into oblivion and obliteration by Donald Trump, which seems pretty close to impossible, despite the fact that he claims it's already happened, or it is achieved through talking. So if you want to answer that question, you know what to do. The other element of this, which I think is a bit easier to dig into, I think I've got a... Did I get a prediction wrong? I think I... Did I say to you on the radio that I didn't think King Charles would go to America for the celebrations of the 250th anniversary? I think I suggested to you that he would, I think I may have used the rather unregal phrase, pull a sickie. I think I may have suggested that King Charles would pull a royal sickie, that given his health concerns at the moment, he would, or his court, his people would claim that he wasn't actually up to making the trip at this time, and looked forward to reacquainting himself with the President and the President and the First Lady at some point in the immediate and hopefully quick, soon, nearby future, that the palace would announce that there was a medical rationale for not making the trip, and everybody would simultaneously believe it and not quite believe it, and Donald Trump wouldn't be able to take grave offence because the King's health issues are well documented, and the King wouldn't be exposed to the humiliation of visiting the court of Mad King Donald, and everybody would therefore be happy. So I don't know what happens behind the scenes, but I'll tell you why I giggled in a moment, because I've just noticed the time. In fact, I'll tell you now, I just noticed the time. It's 11 minutes after 12 on a Wednesday, which means there is no PMQs, which is why James has just texted to say, Kemi is having a blinder today. It's her best performance in years. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but if Keir Starmer wanted the King to go to the United States of America, and the King didn't want to go to the United States of America, I'm pretty sure that the King would go to the United States of America. The palace can make representations and it can make arguments, but the very simple equation is that the King does what His Majesty's government tells him to do. It's one of the really strange quirks of our unwritten constitution, in that the King is the head of state and the government is nominally his, but he's also a diplomatic tool. He is also required to do what the government wants him to do, has been since the times of Charles II, really, but it's, of course, evolved and escalated in more recent centuries. And therefore, I'm looking today at the very real possibility that King Charles doesn't really want to go to the United States of America to visit Donald Trump. And frankly, apart from Nigel Farage, who went all the way to the United States of America to visit Donald Trump, and Donald Trump didn't want to see him quite recently. But apart from Nigel Farage, who would want to go? And Dick Littlejohn, of course, over at the Daily Mail. Apart from them, who would want to go to the United States of America to visit Donald Trump? And yet the King is required to do so. And part of the reason why he is required to do so is because it's the 250th anniversary of American independence. Now, I'm probably being a bit dense, but as a Brit, why are we celebrating that? Surely we should be mourning the loss of a jewel in our colonial crown. I mean, imagine if we were still hoovering up all the revenues of American taxation and living high on the hog over in Blighty, with our sort of colonial outpost of the United States of America being used essentially as a sort of cash crop. Why would the King celebrate the independence of the United States of America? They said that that Queen Mary, I think it was Queen Mary, but don't ask me which one, or indeed how many Queen Marys there have been. I've told you before and I'll tell you again, I studied medieval European history, so ask me anything you want about Charlemagne, but I'm not that good on, and I can do divorce, beheaded, died, divorce, beheaded, survived, but I can't remember which Queen Mary it was. There's only been one Queen Mary, hasn't there? Well, no, there was William and Mary, and there was Bloody Mary. I think it was Bloody Mary who died, they said, with Calais on her heart. Have you heard that phrase? She died with Calais on her heart. I think we lost Calais during her reign, and she was very, very sad and cross about it. And yet now we're being asked to believe that an English monarch is going to be helping to celebrate the 250th anniversary of essentially losing a war. But that's not the point, is it? The bridges between the United States and the United Kingdom remain strong. And rather long, actually, unless you're speaking metaphorically. And the King is, I think, required to go. So I want to make it not about him, necessarily, although you can express sympathy or lack of sympathy for him, as you please. I want to make it about the government. I'm fascinated by this question of breach and what Starmer should do to better recognise the changing nature of the relationship, the changing nature of the White House. This struck me as quite a good opportunity, as the President continues to insult our Prime Minister in deeply inappropriate and often quite personal ways, with the connivance of our traitorous right-wing media and political establishment. This struck me as quite a good way for him to push back against the President of the United States diplomatically and simply say, well, no, of course we can't have a state visit to a man that is routinely and vilely insulting us. He kind of got asked about the question. Natasha was actually asking him a little bit more specifically about whether or not the King should meet Epstein victims, which has been suggested by one of their lawyers. But this is what the Prime Minister had to say about the looming state visit.
In relation to the King, I think it's important to appreciate this is part of the 250 celebrations that are in place. So it's a long-planned visit. And the US and UK are close allies, have been for a very, very long time. But this is a visit that, as I say, has been long planned and is part of the 250 celebrations. That's where the focus of the visit will be.
So, if the King didn't go, would it have been petty and petulant or proper and political? Because I'm going to tell you that I don't think he should go. I think it's undignified and unfair to require the King to travel to the United States of America while Donald Trump remains in office. And if you want to tell me that it's not about who is in office, it's about the relationship between two countries, then I will probably allow my pendulum to swing a bit. But as it stands now, the King is an old man who is not in the best of health, who has, whether you approve of monarchy or not, dedicated his life to what they see as service and duty, and will do so again on this trip. So he will sort of marshal his forces and bolt on his crown and consider it to be the price that he pays for the life of enormous privilege and luxury that he enjoys. But I, as a subject, and that's not a word I like, as a subject, I don't think he should be required to go on this trip. I'd like to think they allowed him to make the final choice, but I don't think that things work like that. What I do want to know next is what you think. 0345 60 60 973. Should the King be going on this trip at all? Or does Donald Trump's conduct and delinquency mean that we are exposing His Majesty to an unacceptable and entirely unfair ordeal? It's 12:18.
This is LBC.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At Lidl, treat yourself to a whole Easter lunch for eight for under £1.60 per person, with all the tantalising trimmings. That's a leg of lamb, carrots, potatoes, parsnips, mint sauce, and of course, the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. See lidl.co.uk/bendless for details.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, energising a better Britain.
90 minutes after 12 is the time. The reason I was struggling with the word West earlier in the programme, and Omar, don't go anywhere, I want to get you up first in a minute on the question of the state visit, is because I couldn't off the top of my head. In fact, I'm willing to wager that nobody off the top of their head could name all 35 countries in the alliance that Keir Starmer was referring to earlier. Do you ever do that when you've got insomnia? I tell you what my latest one is. I try and remember all 9 short stories in J.D. Salinger's collection for Esme Love and Squalor. But as my daughter pointed out when I tried to test her on it the other day, it was my specialist subject on Celebrity Mastermind, so I have a little bit of a head start. If you can name all 35 countries in the alliance that Keir Starmer was talking about earlier, I'll give you the money myself. Here we go. Ready? United Kingdom, France, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, Japan, Canada, Republic of Korea, New Zealand, Denmark, Latvia, Slovenia, Estonia, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Czechia, Romania, Bahrain, Lithuania, Australia, United Arab Emirates, Portugal, Trinidad and Tobago, Croatia, Bulgaria, Kosovo, Panama, North Macedonia, Nigeria, Montenegro, Albania, the Marshall Islands, Chile and Moldova are all acting as one. Hopefully, when it comes to the Strait of Hormuz, and whether or not they possess sufficient diplomatic heft to reach a peaceful resolution with Iran, I do not know, but I reckon it's a more likely flyer than a violent resolution being achieved by Donald Trump, who I would not put past the deployment of troops on the ground in the near to middle distance. Not, remember, boots on the ground. It's our own little, thing. It's our own little attempt to redress a great imbalance. The rejection of the phrase boots on the ground, because it dehumanizes the phenomenon, and it's people on the ground. It's sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters that will be deployed in Iran if Donald Trump elects to escalate the situation. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Omer is in Edinburgh on the question of the state visit. What have you got, mate?
Hi, James. It's a pleasure to speak to you. You're a bit of a hero of mine.
Ah, good choice. Carry on.
So I think that I'm not a big fan of Keir Starmer's premiership so far. However, I think he's conducted himself very well in this matter. And I think it's trickier to navigate between Trump and Iran than it is to get a ship through the Hormuz Strait at the moment. And so he's choosing diplomacy. And so he has to employ his diplomatic big guns. And to America and Trump, there's no bigger diplomatic big gun than the king. But rather than having a state visit here and Trump reveling in that, the king, who would be very, very well versed in tricky situations, to go over there to just try and keep Trump sweet for long enough, and then also then to try and diplomatically get a solution from Iran. In which respect, I think that by not engaging is probably the smartest move, because you can draw a correlation between Britain not engaging with Iran now and Saudi not engaging in the Six-Day War and therefore having amenable relationships with Israel going forward. And we can maybe take that as a template. They don't see us as a threat and an enemy, and therefore they'll be more liable to give us a favorable deal
I mean, there's two things going on here. Now, number one is that you deploy King Charles as a diplomatic tool.
Yes, absolutely.
And I suppose that makes Donald Trump an undiplomatic tool.
That tool is right.
And the second bit it does is that we are, oh lordy, and I think probably correctly, we are applying more rationality to the Iranian regime than we are to the American.
Well, who do you believe more? Who do you trust more whenever they speak at this moment in time?
Yeah, you don't have to like them.
No.
But in order to simply say that when they say 2 plus 2, they're probably going to say is 4. Whereas when Donald Trump says 2 plus 2, he's quite likely to conclude that that adds up to 763.
Absolutely. And in terms of dealing with a despotic regime, which many people will see the Iranians as, we already have precedent. We already are good pals with the Saudis, and they, before Gaza, created the greatest humanitarian disaster of this millennium in Yemen, aided by the British. So we already deal with despots.
Yeah, and even on that list of 35 countries that are part of our alliance on this particular project, you've got, I mean, the United Arab Emirates, where some people have discovered recently you can get locked up in jail for taking photographs of bomb damage that has been visited upon your own building. So, you know, there isn't a great deal of moral high ground to go around. So just run me, I like your analysis in every single way. The bit that I just need you to reaffirm is what difference sending Charles would make. It just keeps, because you're still treating Trump as someone who is susceptible to being kept sweet. And I don't know if he is, I think, because you remember how quickly he went from being allowed to drive around King Charles's garden in a big golden carriage to insulting us again. I don't know how many brownie points, diplomatic brownie points, sending the king actually does secure. So just run me through again why it's the right thing to go ahead.
It's really distasteful. You have to hold your nose and just do it and just deal with terrible people, unfortunately. But at this moment in time, whenever there are whenever the world is in a bit of a crisis in terms of economically wise, you do need the United States on side, because we've made that decision as British ourselves. We've pulled ourselves away from the European Union. So who do we then?
Yeah, but we're finally beginning to row back. I mean, thank goodness.
I hope so.
Well, we are. That was one bit of Starmer's speech earlier today that would have been welcomed by everybody in the country who actually understands anything. Which means the Daily Mail, of course, are furious. But the breach would be too big. The diplomatic message would be too big to say that the king ain't coming, because the subtext, however you dressed it up, would be that it's because you're such a twerp.
Yeah. In the short to medium term, you need to make sure that America then also doesn't see you as somebody who's not on their side. There is a special relationship there. I don't know how special it is.
He keeps insulting us, though.
He does. And you know, far be it from me to be on Keir Starmer's side, but absolutely I would be on his side in terms of the way that he's dealt with this. But he is a temporary fixture. The only worry with Trump is that we don't get Trumpites like we had Blairites and Thatcherites running America.
I mean, God forbid that should come to pass, but I'm afraid it's looking more likely than not at the moment, according to the opinion polls. I just wanted to triple check something while you were talking, Omar. I hope I didn't get distracted, because I had a couple of messages telling me that David Dimbleby had come out and said that the King's trip to America should be called off. And if Dimbles is doing it, then who are we to quibble? You can't quibble with Dimble. That's one of the great rules of journalism. Dimbleby has, as far as I can tell, come out and said it would be an embarrassment, and he's urging ministers to call it off, recognising, of course, the point I made, that it is up to ministers whether it goes ahead or not, and not up to the king himself or indeed to the palace. And listen, I've never met the bloke, and it's highly unlikely that I ever will, but I don't think he would consider it appropriate to pull a sickie. I just think his sense of duty is... I've met Dimbleby. He did Full Disclosure. It was a cracking interview, even though I say so myself. But I've never met King Charles. I don't think it would be commensurate with his sense of gravitas and duty for him to pull a sickie. If he were to ring Keir Starmer and go, "Hello, Keir, it's Charles. Oh, God, I think I've got laryngitis. I'm not going to be able to go. I'm not going to be able to go." That reminded me of working at River Island in Worcester in 1991, when I made that phone call on two or three occasions. But I don't think it would be appropriate for the King to do so. And more importantly, I don't think the King would think it would be appropriate for him to do it either. Thank you, Omar. Kaleem is in Birmingham. Kaleem, what would you like to say?
Hello, good afternoon, James.
Hello, mate.
I think the King wouldn't have to phone himself anyway. He'd have someone do it for him.
Yeah, so it makes it less mean like getting his...
It's not quite River Island for him, is it, James?
No, I take your point. I mean, I wasn't being entirely serious, Kaleem.
I definitely don't think he should go, because look at what's just happened with the Japanese Prime Minister going and sat in the Oval Office, and then he mentions Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, and then, you know, just imagine the King sat there, and then he turned around and says, "Oh, the 250th anniversary of us kicking your lot out."
He will do something like that.
He will, won't he?
Is that a reason not to go? I mean, the fact that Donald Trump will come out of that more embarrassed than King Charles, except for the sort of sycophants and traitors, sycophants in the American case, traitors in the British case, it would be much more embarrassing. And even our mad right-wing media wouldn't side with Donald Trump against the actual king, he says with great confidence, while wondering immediately whether that's true or not.
Yeah, but you put the king in that kind of position.
I think it would be funny. I would like King Charles not to wear a suit. For mischief value, I would like King Charles to turn up in military fatigues. He's got enough uniforms, hasn't he? Why can't he go in one of them? Or possibly in a shell suit, in a nice Sergio Tacchini shell suit. But I don't... you could borrow one of mine. I'm wearing, Fila, actually. I got it for the James concert at the O2. Anyway, we digress. Thank you. I don't know if I agree with Kaleem. I mean, it will be an embarrassment, obviously, for all concerned, but not necessarily for the King, unless he says something personal and really obnoxious about the King, in which case there's a massive groundswell of sympathy for the King, as opposed to for Donald Trump. And speaking of Donald Trump, our Donald Trump correspondent is not currently in Washington, D.C. He's in London Town, London, UK. I speak of Simon Marks, who will be in the studio with me and with you after the very latest headlines with Amelia Cox.
The Prime Minister has described Donald Trump's claims that he is strongly considering pulling out of NATO as noise. The President has called the alliance a paper tiger and claimed the UK doesn't have a navy. Three more people have been arrested after four volunteer ambulances were targeted in an alleged arson attack. The vehicles belong to the Jewish community in Golders Green in northwest London. And an LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. LBC weather, cloudy for most areas this afternoon. A band of rain moving across the north of the UK. Sunny spells and showers in western Scotland and Northern Ireland later. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
The Famous Five are on the train to Cardiff, planning their Welsh adventure.
Did you know Wales is absolutely bursting with myths and legends, says Anne? And number one on my list is the legend of the Red Dragon.
Then tomorrow we'll look for the legendary fairies of Penold Castle, adds Dick.
But first, let's try the legendary Welsh cakes, quips George.
Yes, let's start there, laughs Anne.
Great Western Railway. Legendary adventures start here.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex Business Card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Happy Meal just got a cosmic boost. Because the Super Mario Galaxy movie has landed in cinemas. And Mario hasn't come alone. There's a whole galaxy for your little ones to discover. Some fun, some food. It's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 4th of May, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
Supply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:32. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Extraordinary, really, to think that a commentator as august as David Dimbleby could be calling for the King not to go to the United States for a state dinner with a leader who goes out of his way to insult Britain. And yet it is going ahead. I don't know why. We may never know why. You have to wait for secret papers to be published decades hence before you find out what communications went on between Downing Street and the palace. But in my opinion, and were I compelled to place a small wager on it, I would say that probably the Prime Minister's opinion has prevailed and that the palace would not see it as their role to even have a view. They would probably cross their fingers and hope Starmer will tell them not to go, but suck it up and strap on the pomp and ceremony when it is made clear that they are going to have to. Anyway, let's move away from that temporarily and look instead at the situation in the United States of America. Simon Marks is here. Have you been deported?
No, I'm here voluntarily and willingly. Let me say, very willingly.
Good.
For a few days. And it is a joy to be here, James.
It's always lovely to see you. It really is. What's happened since I came on air this morning?
We know, of course, that President Trump has sort of fired the sounding klaxon on his decision to withdraw the United States from NATO, that we should definitely talk about. But we also know that President Trump is going to be making a primetime address to the American people tonight. We don't know exactly what he's going to say, but we do know what he told reporters in the White House yesterday, which is that in his telling of the story, we are now approaching the beginning of the end of America's military excursion, as he likes to call it, to Iran.
We hit them hard. We got rid of a lot of the radicalized lunatics along the strait. But if they want something, but I would say that within two weeks, maybe three.
The U.S. will be gone or done with the war in two,
I think,
weeks.
Two or three weeks.
Yeah.
We'll leave.
We'll leave, he says, Jack.
How many weeks?
Two to three weeks.
It's like deja vu all over again.
So starting in about 2 weeks, we're building some brand new section.
I will make that decision, I would say, over the next 2 weeks.
Someday you'll be reading about it, maybe in 100 years from now, maybe in 2 weeks. Whether it's next week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, doesn't make any difference. And we're asking every American to make major changes to reduce social interactions over the next 2 weeks.
Within 2 weeks, you'll see numbers.
The peak of death rate is likely to hit in 2 weeks. This war would have been over in 2 weeks.
In three days, I heard it from Putin.
I can't tell you that, but I'll let you know in about 2 weeks, within 2 weeks.
So you could take it to the bank.
Well, I just think we could work our way through them. This is the BBC, but I ain't got the staff. Peter Cook didn't have the Latin. I haven't got the staff to go through how many of those deadlines or deliveries were actually achieved with.
I think I could probably answer the question pretty quickly.
I think you probably could.
It might be a big round number.
Absolutely none of them. Here's the thing, Simon. This speech tonight, this address, this national address about what they've described as an important update on Iran. You and I have been following this more closely than most, because that's our job. And yet, neither of us really would want to stake a month's wages on him either announcing that he's won and it's all over and they're all coming home, or announcing that it's won and it's all over but he's sending troops to occupy Karg Island.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I would stake a month's wages on him saying that he's won.
Oh, that bit's,
I think
that
he's
bit's
definitely going to say that. But what he says after that, I think, is open to question. And just on the 2 to 3 weeks issue, his own defence secretary, Pete Hegseth, was saying yesterday, could go on for another 4 weeks, could be another 6 weeks, could be another 8 weeks. It's all undetermined. I mean, this war has been extemporised by the President of the United States from the moment the authorization was given to the Pentagon to go ahead and launch an attack that, in Secretary of State Marco Rubio's telling, was, of course, a direct result of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying to the United States, I'm going in whether you're coming with me or not, and the United States deciding that they needed to go in with him because they didn't want American troops facing reprisals for military action that only the Israelis had taken. Now, of course, the Secretary of State unconvincingly walked those claims back.
Still feasible.
24
right?
hours. Later. Feasible. Yeah. Oh, more than feasible.
I think
if you attached Marco Rubio to a lie detector, yeah, it's clear that what he said, that the first telling of the story, yes, was accurate. So now Donald Trump finds himself, he's paddling a barbed wire canoe. He's looking for an off ramp. He needs to find an off ramp because so much international pressure is being placed on him, and because of the situation regarding oil prices and the price of petrol. And that situation regarding oil prices is what makes the next claim that he is making so extraordinary, because he appears now to be saying, and perhaps he'll say this in the address tonight, that reopening the Strait of Hormuz, demining it, clearing it, preventing the Iranians from continuing to restrict tanker traffic through that strategic waterway is not his problem. It's the problem of other people to solve. Take a listen to what he said yesterday about the Strait of Hormuz.
It's not like you're taking out an army or you're taking out a country or they can drop it. Or you can take a machine gun from the shore and shoot a little few bullets at a ship, or maybe an over-the-shoulder missile, small missiles. That's not for us. That'll be for France. That'll be for whoever's using the strait.
It's not for us. That's not a major military deployment. It's not for the world's most powerful military. So once again, diminishing European militaries. Let France clear it. Let the UK clear it. Let the countries that actually use the Strait of Hormuz clear it, because he is right to point to the fact that only 2% of America's energy supplies transit through the Strait of Hormuz. But of course, he behaves as though the global price of oil is not set by the market. And as if it's not. I have no concern about the Strait of Hormuz. Other people can go in and clear it because it doesn't have any relevance to us.
Good luck with
but
that.
It does have relevance to every motorist paying $4 a gallon for gas.
And the average American will understand that for all the gaslighting that Trump will continue to engage in.
Even if they don't, they'll soon figure it out because they'll have to carry on paying the higher prices.
We took a call last week. I don't know if I gave it enough credit at the time from somebody who was pointing out Trump's entire life has been typified by expecting other people to clear up his mess. Whether, Roy Cohn would it have been at one point, and other people, his father would have bailed him out as well, and various, they went to Russian banks to get money after all the American banks had this. I think we can rely upon his own son for telling us this, probably indiscreetly, after American banks refused to lend to them, Russian banks would do so. So he's always not only expected other people to clean up after him, but he would simultaneously deny that he has made the mess that other people are required to clean up. And it struck me this morning, remembering that call, that this is just another example of that.
Yeah, I mean, it is staggering to imagine that you can go in alongside Israel, attack Iran, create complete international, massive global economic crisis, not achieve what at least one of your stated aims, which was regime change and the rising up of the Iranian people to take matters into their own hands. Instead, you claim that because the regime has changed in the sense that it's got a different supreme leader than it had a few weeks ago and may yet have another supreme leader further down the line, that is regime change. I mean, by no stretch of the imagination can events in Iran be described as regime change. So you create an unholy mess.
Sorry, I never correct you, but you're wrong. What you meant to say was that in no circumstances can what's happened in Iran be accurately described.
Right,
because they're going to bloody describe it as a regime change.
Precisely. Right? Very good. Thank you. Thank you for the corrective. Can accurately be described as regime change. But what you've done is create this unholy mess on the world stage and then basically said, I mean, we were being told over the weekend in Washington, he's bored of it. Yeah. He's bored. He wants to move on. He's tired. Doesn't want to focus on it anymore. And so everybody else now, including the UK, has to contemplate the long-term damage of this because if he leaves things the way they are, if he doesn't go for a much more punitive series of actions and possibly the very risky deployment of ground forces in Kharg Island, the Iranians have made it absolutely clear there's no return to the status quo ante for the Strait of Hormuz. They are going to charge tolls, a couple of million dollars a tanker, for any ship that wants to transit the waterway, unless, they come from China, maybe Pakistan, countries that are willing to do deals.
Malaysia apparently has got a freebie at the moment.
$2 million a pop.
Yeah.
And that is how the regime is going to line its own pockets and rebuild its inner strength further, undercutting the Iranian people that you claimed on February the 28th you wanted to. This is your time. This is your moment of action.
Of course, that hasn't been achieved.
Of course, absolutely not. And the only objective he can point to that has been achieved is the one that was already achieved before the military action began, which is Iran is not getting a nuclear weapon. Well, we knew that because, I mean, there's no, even his own intelligence community says Iran was not getting a nuclear weapon. So, yes, he is expecting.
That's the thing they cling to. I don't get many texts from blithering idiots on this subject, but there is obviously somewhere on the internet, there is an argument that goes like, oh, so you want Iran to get a nuclear weapon, do you? And it demonstrates levels of ignorance that are almost Brexit-like in their boneheadedness, but it exists as an argument. It's just not getting any traction anywhere, really, except in the darker recesses.
Within the corridors of the US government, got no traction, except in the Oval Office and in the office of Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War and Secretary of State, who probably knew but turned a blind eye to it because that's what you do if you serve in the Trump administration.
Well, you have to do.
And speaking of the Secretary of State, we should take a listen to what Marco Rubio said last night about the future of NATO.
I think there's no doubt, unfortunately, after this conflict is concluded, we are going to have to re-examine that relationship. We're going to have to re-examine the value of NATO and that alliance for our country. Ultimately, that's a decision for the president to make, and he'll have to make it. But I do think, unfortunately, we are going to have to re-examine whether or not this alliance that has served this country well for a while is still serving that purpose.
And of course, the president has basically told the Daily Telegraph overnight he's made the decision. And that is why this is, I think, in many ways, the biggest day in all of our lives, because none of us, of our generation, has lived in an era in which the American protective security blanket provided by NATO wasn't operative. And when the Prime Minister was questioned today about the future of NATO and American involvement in it, and absolutely restated his adherence to the core principles of NATO and the benefits of NATO, where he notably didn't go was explaining what NATO looks like if the Americans are out. And the Americans, in Donald Trump's own telling in those comments to the Daily Telegraph this morning, look like they're heading for the exit.
But it's Donald Trump.
Yes. I mean,
might give himself the NATO Peace Prize tomorrow.
There's another throwaway comment, though, in that interview with the Telegraph, where he says, NATO's a paper tiger. And it's not just me that thinks it.
Oh, no.
Vladimir Putin thinks so as well. He knows it as well. And if you're sitting in Ukraine reading that, as if you're sitting in the Foreign Office
reading that.
He's repeated
what Putin's told him.
You should be very concerned about it, because it really underscores this notion that when he said over, I've lost track of the dates, a couple of days ago, when he said of the UK, we will not be there when you need us. That's a real threat. Mm. You know, this Nigel Farage line that you should not take him literally, you should take him seriously, I always disagree with.
I think he might
have abandoned
that.
You should take him literally.
Yes, of course you should. That's been clear to everybody with a brain, which means that Nigel Farage possibly hasn't realised it yet. Can he do it, though? I mean, you've got, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm plucking this from my memory banks, but you have the National Defence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2024, which prohibits the President from withdrawing the United States from NATO without the approval of the Senate or statutory authorization. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about Donald Trump, who's done lots and lots of things he's not allowed to do. In his personal life, in his private life, in his public life, in his political life. So the question might be moot, but it would be quite hard to get this through Congress, wouldn't it? Or the
If he bothers, just announces we're not in NATO anymore and cancels the direct debit. I do think the fact that Rubio voiced it there last night, it was on Fox News last night, sounded like that was the beginning of the move, the beginning of the Secretary of State, you know, laying the groundwork on Capitol Hill and saying, this is going to happen. And you know, it was unthinkable in the first term that he would be able to withdraw from NATO, even if he wanted to, because he was surrounded by people who would restrain him, particularly in the National Security Council. And now, as we've said time and again, there is no restraining influence in that inner circle.
I hope you're wrong. Because we're back then to the question of whether or not he's some sort of Manchurian candidate, or whether or not the compromat that Vladimir Putin has on him is such that he is now going to withdraw the United States from NATO, which in the great scheme of geopolitical things must count as Vladimir Putin's greatest dream.
And I mean, trebles all round in the Kremlin, you know, even through the mere suggestion that he's now considering this. It is, of course, it's a catastrophe for the historic tapestry of collective security in Europe. It forces every single European government onto the back foot. And also, we've got another, 2.5 years of this to go, even if there is a transfer of power in Washington, D.C., and even if a new president arrives who is committed to the NATO alliance, how is Europe ever going to be in a position to believe a president who, like Joe Biden says, America is back?
You've done it. You've made me understand something I didn't previously understand, because I haven't shared your understanding or your depth of concern about this. And this is why Mark Rutte has behaved in such a horribly sycophantic fashion, because he thinks it's a real possibility.
Well, I mean, the only person who can talk him down, as far as we can tell, is Mark Rutte. And he has gone so far out
and
on a limb.
Know why.
I mean, he was on TV in the US about 10 days ago urging American voters to get behind Donald Trump's Iran campaign, because they needed to understand that it was all about strengthening American national security. His memoir is going to be the most fascinating book to read.
Yeah.
If it reveals whether he's really a Trump fanboy or he just plays one on TV.
It seems unlikely that he really is. I mean, people who aren't sure, he's the Dutch politician, Dutchman and the Secretary General of NATO since October 2024, former Prime Minister of the Netherlands, who has come in for a lot of stick from satirists and commentators alike. Did he call him daddy at one point?
At one point, yeah. But now coming in for a lot of stick from NATO members for saying what he said in that American TV interview, because he went so far off the reservation, but presumably felt he needed to do so in order to attract the attention of the president.
And this is why the question of, good Lord, yeah, why he has been doing it might just have been answered, because he was the first to see that the threat of leaving NATO is both real and now present.
Can I make one other point about all of this, which is that we ought to bear in mind always that the national security strategy of the Trump administration makes it official government policy to undermine governments in Europe that the Trump administration considers not to be led by patriotic European leaders. And by that, they obviously don't mean the Prime Minister, and they obviously don't mean Kemi Badenoch. They obviously mean, in this country's case, Nigel Farage and Reform UK. Yeah. And I think as you look at this Iran adventure, it would be worth remembering that the upheaval that this is causing, our government, the French government, the German government, governments all over Western Europe, may not be simply an ancillary benefit to the Trump administration. It may also be part of the whole plan of continuing to undermine democratically elected governments in Europe that Donald Trump thinks are led by, as he has characterized them, a bunch of losers.
Yeah, which he doesn't really think at all. He's just following a sort of game plan that has been imposed from without, and I just don't know whether it's coming from the Christian evangelicals or the Kremlin, because he hasn't come up with this idea himself. If he thought that popularity or status lay in being woke, he'd be the wokest man in America.
Well, it's all part of Project 2025. It's the whole plan playing out in real time, you know, as it was written down.
12:51 is the time. I don't know if thank you is quite the right word to use at this point, Simon, but thank you.
You're welcome, Jim.
It is 12:51.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Wages, energy bills and benefits changes kick in today. The Prime Minister promises help in hard times. Donald Trump on the verge of leaving NATO, and why I think Queen Camilla should meet Epstein's victims.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Fine. Need somebody to love.
This Easter at Dreams, the more you spend, the more you save, with up to £500 off. Anything to add, Beds?
Oh, I do. It all ends on Tuesday, so don't get caught napping.
All good springs must come to an end.
Dreams. Love your bed.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary's Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. And for this week only, we're also guaranteeing 5 winners of £20,000 in our bonus draw. Enter by midnight on Sunday to be in the draw. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, energising a better Britain.
12.54 is the time. I got a missed information for you. I thought I had a woke watch, but in many ways it explores similar territory to the April Fools I told you about at the beginning of the show. When I was a kid, I think I was... is it 12 noon where you can't do them anymore? Is 12 noon the moratorium on April Fools? So I have to tell you that this is an April Fool. I'm not going to present it to you as a story that's true, although we're living in the under... we're living in the upside down, aren't we, at the moment? So who knows what's true and what's not true? Donald Trump said he's going to pull out of NATO. April Fool, not. This one got me this morning. It's on the Byline Times have published it. Liz Truss appointed by Trump to dismantle the deep space blob. The president is a big fan of the Prime Minister's YouTube channel, the White House press secretary told reporters, and I read the first paragraph. White House officials have confirmed that former British Prime Minister Liz Truss is to become a senior administrator within NASA with immediate effect following an executive directive made by Donald Trump late on Tuesday night. I haven't actually double-checked that that is an April Fool, but I did notice the date on the page and sort of do that thing where you go, oh, don't. So I saw the date when I scrolled back up the page and thought, oh, lordy, how could you fall for that, you wombat? But I haven't actually double-checked that it is an April Fool, and that's why it's such a good one. Because unlikely, right, but impossible that Donald Trump would put Liz Truss in charge of something at NASA, of all places? No, not impossible at all. Have you met his Secretary of War? Have you met his Secretary of Health? Have you met his press... spokesperson? Have you met anybody in his administration? Then look me in the eye and tell me that Liz Truss can't be head of space. It's there. Anyway, there's another Liz Truss story in the news, but I don't think we're going to have time for it because Philip in Bognor Regis has been waiting already for an unconscionably long time. That, of course, is, correct me if I'm wrong, Philip, but that's Royal Bognor Regis.
That is Regal Bognor Regis. Regis, yes.
Regis, Regis. So yes, you have a particular interest in the monarchy by dint of coming from Bognor. What do you think about the state visit?
Shouldn't go ahead.
What? Shouldn't?
No, definitely not.
Why not?
Well, what happens when you appease a child, a bad behaving child?
Yeah, they just get worse.
They just get worse. He will be nice for a while, and then he will abuse us. And he'll enjoy it. He wants to watch us squirm. He wants to watch anybody squirm. This is the nature of Donald Trump. He looks like a normal person.
Well, are you sure? Really? Not. Hang on, I'm going to have to stop you there. He does not look like he doesn't look like a normal person.
Well,
what on earth are you on about?
I'm just trying to be reasonable.
Yeah, but you mean he looks like he looks like he's mostly human, is what you mean?
Well, what I mean is that mad people don't always look mad.
No, that's true. That's
true. This could be very deceptive. But, you know, if we were judging him on the old 1970s national health scale, I'm afraid he would be down, he'd be down as a...
It would be, yeah. I think you're probably right. A public diagnosis. 140,000 people have signed a petition calling for the trip to be cancelled, largely because of Trump's repeated verbal attacks on Britain. And David Dimbleby's he's got the BBC running through his veins, David Dimbleby. He wouldn't ordinarily offer up an opinion. And of course, him and his brother have been close to Charles, I think, for years. So
what do we have to gain from it?
That was what I was about to ask you.
Insults.
Yeah, nothing is the short answer.
I couldn't say that we would gain anything. You know, in my view, I'm 73. So I've been through quite a few of these.
You're not as old as a king.
Middle East crisis.
Yes.
A few times. Great book, by the way, before I go, How They Broke Britain.
Oh, thank you. I didn't realise you were leaving so soon.
I collect books. I normally only pay £1 for them at the car book sale, but for some reason, you managed to...
Oh, thank God, I thought you were going to spoil it then. I thought you were going to say, but yours was 50p. But no, he's actually paid full price. That's it from me for another day. If you missed it, thank you for that, Philip. Lovely stuff. I can't tell you what. Was it George the Someone who said about Bognor? Do you know this story? You're a royalist. Yeah.
I can always Google it.
It wasn't George from Asda. So there's a line about Bognor that a famous king once said, but I think it would be I'd be in breach of Ofcom regulations if I were to say it on the radio, which is a shame.
Well, keep talking because I can't speak while I'm Googling.
Is it? Oh, right, I'll look it up. Have you got it? If you missed any of today's show, I'll do it slowly, Shee. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app where you can also... George IV?
King George V.
George V. Mm-hmm. You can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts... Oh, I don't need to do it slowly anymore, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC is Tom Swarbrick. And, of course, Simon will be doing some swing cover over the Easter period as well. So I think beginning with the Drive Time show tomorrow, Simon Mark's in the house. You can have him undiluted by my ditherings and interruptions for a few occasions over the holiday period. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Rhymes with rugger.
Rugger Bognor.
Rugger Bognor.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one. George V. At three today, still with the royals, why I think Queen Camilla might have an important role to play on that visit to America and meet the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. At two, Trump in that Telegraph, President Trump, I should say, in that Telegraph article says he's on the verge of leaving NATO, but hasn't he already? What's going on there? But I'm going to start with an awful lot happening this morning in terms of speeches by the Prime Minister, amongst others. Your wages, energy bills, benefits, other costs may change today, some for the better. The Prime Minister is promising help during tough times, and he warns they will be tough. But is this government acting quickly enough for you? Is it being as fleet of foot as others?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Keir Starmer has dismissed comments by Donald Trump that he is strongly considering pulling out of NATO. The Prime Minister says he won't be pressured by noise. European countries have rejected the US President's demand to send warships to reopen the Strait of Hormuz.
NATO is the single most effective military alliance the world has ever seen, and it has kept us safe for many decades, and we are fully committed to NATO.
The Prime Minister avoided saying whether we should change our behaviour as energy prices surge. He argued that the most effective way to reduce the cost of living is for de-escalation in the Middle East. He also declined to say whether he believes the King should meet victims of Jeffrey Epstein during his state visit to the US. It's understood there are no plans for Charles to meet survivors of the convicted sex offender, despite calls for him to do so. Keir Starmer swerved the question from LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark.
In relation to the King, I think it's important to appreciate this is part of the 250 celebrations that are in place. So it's a long-planned visit, and the US and UK are close allies, have been for a very, very long time. But this is a visit that, as I say, has been long-planned and is part of the 250 celebrations. That's where the focus of the visit will be.
Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has consistently and strenuously denied any wrongdoing in his association with Epstein. Three more people have been arrested over an alleged arson attack on four ambulances in northwest London. They belong to a Jewish volunteer service, but also serve the wider community in Golders Green. Two British men, aged 19 and 20, as well as a 17-year-old dual British-Pakistani national, were arrested earlier. The BBC has revealed it did know about a police investigation into Scott Mills in 2017, but obtained new information prior to him being dismissed. It emerged yesterday the presenter was questioned the year after over historical allegations of sexual offences against a child. The case was dropped due to a lack of evidence. And the NHS in England is to prescribe the weight loss jab Wegovy to more than 1 million overweight patients at risk of heart attacks. Health watchdog NICE has recommended the drug, saying it offers an extra layer of protection. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 204 points at 10,381. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most areas this afternoon. A band of rain moving across the north of the UK. Sunny spells and showers in western Scotland and Northern Ireland later. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Spring!
Spring into Easter savings with Aldi's Super 6. Freshly picked seasonal veg for roasts with the most. From an amazing 4p. In store now. Come on down and grab an Easter basket. Or a trolley. Aldi. Always finding ways to save. Products and prices may vary, subject to availability.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Big day today in lots of ways, many ways in fact, but economically for an awful lot of us there are big changes happening today. There are changes to the national living wage. It's up to, if any of it was up $12.71 an hour. It's up to $12.71 an hour. The minimum wage for younger people is up to £10.85 an hour. Heating oil help starts running today. Prescription prices, train fares are frozen. The new energy price cap means a 7% drop to £1,641 a year, but there are already fears that they will sharply go up depending on what happens in the war in Iran, something that the Prime Minister was talking about in a press conference this morning. We'll get a full picture of that from Natasha Clark in just a second. From Monday, the state pension goes up. The two-child benefit cap is gone. And day one sick pay is also being introduced. So there's an awful lot going on economically and a commitment from the Prime Minister today to make sure that people get help. And the Chancellor, again, more than hinting that that help will be partial, not universal. It will be means tested and based on household income. And the question of our relationship with the EU was central, I think, to what Keir Starmer was talking about in that press conference this morning. He took the opportunity to really make clear something he said many times before about the closer ties with Europe. But there was, a sense of urgency in what he said today compared to before, but still insisting that he intends to have good relations with both the EU and the US, despite some of the rather choice language from President Trump towards him and towards the UK of late. Natasha Clark is here, LBC's political editor. This was a real sort of set piece press conference, wasn't it?
Yes, and I felt like it touched on lots of different subjects, didn't it? From obviously Donald Trump's recent interview that came just a few minutes before that press conference was due to begin. In fact, we were expecting it at 10. It didn't come till 10:15. And I wonder whether they were trying to craft some sort of response to Donald Trump's piece, but obviously
on NATO.
Yeah, I think, and trying to get an answer on that. But yes, I thought his answer on the overall theme of getting closer to Europe was very pointed in light of what we just heard and what we have been hearing from Donald Trump for so many months. The fact that Keir Starmer feels the need to lean into the EU instead, it's obvious, and he doesn't want to say it, but it's obvious that now we are seeing Europe as more of a reliable political ally than the United States. And Keir Starmer said at that press conference that he didn't want to choose between the US and the EU. And he said, actually, I think a closer relationship with Europe will make our relationship with the US even stronger. But it was very implicit, wasn't it, from what he was saying? Actually, this is not just good for us politically, but it's good for us economically to be closer to our, you know, closest trading partner in the European Union. So he said he's going to use a summit with the EU later this year to seek more cooperation with the bloc on the economy and security. But a few other topics that came up at that press conference, obviously what he's doing on the cost of living. That's exactly the reason why the Prime Minister wanted to hold this press conference today, to talk about all of the good things that you've just noticed. But obviously we're also facing bills going up left, right and centre. Council tax, teletaxes, water bills. They're all going up now.
I've had my water bills letter.
I've had mine too. It's really poor. I remember mine was like £12 a month, Sheila, and it's shot up. Anyway, it's not about me. But you know, there is a question of how much this cost of living support is actually going to help people when everything else is going up. And also, it's an interesting one because countries around the world have reacted to the war in Iran. And so far, the government has provided a £50 million worth of heating oil fund. And that's about it. They haven't done anything else. They have said all of these things are helping anyway with the cost of living. But those were all things that were in track, Sheila, 6 months ago from the last budget. All of the things that you've just mentioned were things that the government were going to do anyway. So there is question about why on earth the government haven't acted now, I think it's because they feel that the supply is there and it's not needed yet. But I think the government will at some point come under some pressure to announce something. But at the moment, especially on fuel duty, he said he would keep those fuel duty plans under review and that Bill's plans, aka energy plans, are still being worked on.
The other measures that we're taking today, obviously energy bills are going down today on average by £100 a household, and that will remain down until the end of June, whatever happens in the conflict. And I know people are concerned to know that that remains the case, whatever happens in the conflict. So let me be clear about that. And those that are heating their homes with oil are obviously getting support. We are keeping this under